Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the end of the week. Welcome to Friday on the front porch. It is a beautiful autumn day here in what remains of almost level West Virginia. It is a beautiful day indeed. And a strange day. A strange day indeed. The saying goes, most peculiar, mama. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Why is it strange? Well, you know, any Friday that you get up and you find out that the President of the United States of America has just been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, well, let's just put it this way. Memo to the Nobel Committee. Thanks for trying to help. Stop helping. Because this has absolutely driven the right wing into paroxysms of absolute insanity. Pure, unmitigated madness from the local to the national. They are losing their tiny little microscopic minds over this. The racism is boiling out. The bigotry is boiling out. The political hatred is boiling over. And from what I've read, even the White House staff, when they got up this morning and got the news from the committee in Norway, they thought they were being punked. They thought it was a joke. One of them said, is it April 1st already? But yes, the President of the United States, he who our pal Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, refers to as President Not Sure, for reasons having to do with the film Idiocracy, which you will understand should you choose to view that film, if you haven't already, has been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Mostly for his efforts to restart peace initiatives among the occupied territories between the Israelis and the Palestinians, also as a direct result of his outreach, what is being termed his outreach to the Muslim world, and his attempt to dial back some of the madness inherent in the mere existence of nuclear arms. But I'm not kidding. It is driving Wingnut World absolutely crazy. And I mean the sheets and the hoods are coming out. By the way, if just throwing this out there, if Rush Limbaugh is allowed to purchase the St. Louis Rams, maybe they can stop being the St. Louis Rams. Maybe they should be renamed the St. Louis Hoods. You know, the right wing really does give that phrase, boys in the hood, an entirely different meaning, doesn't it? No, they might be called the St. Louis Hoods because there's lots of African-American NFL players who say, with regard to Limbaugh owning an NFL franchise, oh, hell no! I read a number of comments earlier today with regard to that particular issue. And it is, not going over well, to say the least. New York Jets linebacker Bart Scott says players remember what Limbaugh said about Donovan McNabb. adds that the NFL would not be wise to allow Limbaugh into the league. In particular, he said, it's an oxymoron that he criticized Donovan McNabb. I think Bart Scott's been listening to some liberal talk. I'm wondering if Bart Scott is a Malloy listener, perhaps. Because didn't the word oxymoron originate on the Malloy program with regard to a description for street drug junkie Flush Flembaugh? Scott said a lot of us took it as a more of a racial type thing, talking about the McNabb comment. I can only imagine how his players would feel. I know I wouldn't want to play for him. He's a jerk. And this is one of those for-profit media moments where you can't report a real word because, you know, it's a newspaper. It's a family newspaper. Can't say them words. But apparently, according to the New York Daily News, Bart Scott said he's an hyphen. He's an hyphen. I didn't even, I mean, I know there's that whole linguistic grammatical thing about whether one puts a or an in front of a word beginning with H as hyphen does. Oh, is it possible that he said he's an... Mm-hmm. Woohoo! Yeah. There's no nice way to say it. But he said he's an, and it begins with an A, and it involves a hole. And I'm just trying not to say it, because apparently that's not the kind of thing you say in polite society, even if it's legitimate reportage. What he said about McNabb was inappropriate and insensitive, totally off base. He could offer me whatever he wanted. I wouldn't play for him. I wouldn't play for Rush Limbaugh. My principles are greater, and I can't be bought. Why is that? Well, just a few choice selections, a few choice cuts, if you will, from Flush Flembaugh, the street drug junkie, the oxymoron, the man who takes boys-only trips to the Dominican Republic and carries Viagra with him on somebody else's prescription. Just saying. Let's see. Look, let me put it to you this way. The NFL all too often looks like a game between the Bloods and the Crips without any weapons. There, I said it. President Obama is black, and I think he's got a chip on his shoulder. We need segregated buses. This is Obama's America. Democrats are interested in Darfur to secure the black voting bloc, my friends. My friends, minorities never do anything for which they have to apologize. Obama's nomination for president goes back to the fact that nobody had the guts to stand up and say no to a black guy. After all, Obama is a African American. So, you know, that's the lunacy of the right wing. And I'll be honest, I didn't catch him today, so God only knows. But anyway, seeing as how that seems to be the sentiment that nobody of color would play for any team he owned, yeah, they could be the St. Louis Hoods. Not like, you know, street hood, tough guy, West Side Story with the switchblades and the leather jackets and all that. No, the little pointy white hoods would go with the sheets, and you know, you got exalted wizards and grand dragons and lumping lizards and so forth. Let's see. Then there's Matthias Kiwanuka, who plays for the New York Giants, rather a right fine defensive end. He said, I don't want anything to do with a team that he has any part of. He also said, all I know is from the last comment I heard, he said, Obama's America, white kids are getting beat up on the bus while black kids are chanting right on. That's what caused him to say, I don't want anything to do with a team he has any part of. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I mean, he'd have to pay like twice the money. Isn't there a salary? They'd have to eliminate the salary cap for any team that Rush Limbaugh owned, wouldn't they? Because he'd have to pay double just to get people to. But oh, it's weird. So he wants an NFL franchise, but what he does have is a seat on the. Are you ready for this? He's got a seat on the judges panel for the Miss America pageant. No, I'm not kidding. It's astonishing. Limbaugh will be one of a panel of seven distinguished judges that will help decide which of the 53 contestants will capture the Miss America 2010 title. Is he going to be the one that says, there she goes, and serve as the goodwill ambassador for the Children's Miracle Network, as well as introduce the first Go Green platform for MAO? The MAO president, Miss America organization, and CEO is Art McMaster. He said, we're thrilled to have Rush join us for our pageant this year. He will bring a thrilling new dimension to the competition, and we know that the 2010 Miss America pageant will be filled with new twists and exciting opportunities with him as one of our national judges. Did anybody happen to tell the Miss America organization that having him help launch Go Green is a little bit like having the Grand Dragon launch a racial sensitivity program? It's exactly like that. Because, of course, there's no greater anti-environmentalist. There's no greater the denier of the human impact on the planet than Flush Flimball. And then there's the fact that this is a pageant that has strived in recent years to rise above, you know, because the feminist organizations, those people that Limbaugh refers to as femi-Nazis, remember, complained that it put women's physical appearances above and beyond their mental or cerebral capabilities. You remember. And there was some validity in the criticism. Yeah. Well, these are beautiful women. Many of them have lots of talents. And many of them are very, very intelligent. Because there are scholarships involved, I do believe. And Rush is kind of a misogynist. You know, he's been married, what, three times, and now he lives by himself in a 24,000-square-foot mansion with a cat and the maid who takes the cigar box full of money out and brings it back with a cigar box full of street drugs. Yeah. Among other things, he has said that women love Hillary Clinton because they've had two or three abortions. He said women live longer than men because their lives are easier. He said that all women want is to be hired as eye candy. He says this woman, he says that this nation is being feminized. Says that America, he complains about the chickification of America. And so Miss America organization president and CEO Art McMaster says, we are thrilled to have Rush join us for our pageant this year. You gotta at least a little bit wonder why that is. But it is a crazy Friday, and we can discuss it at length and at your leisure. With the news that President Barack Obama had won the Nobel Peace Prize, Eric Erickson... No, really, Erickson. Eric Erickson. My name is Jan Janssen. I live in Wisconsin. I work in the lumber mills there. Now, Eric Erickson tweeted earlier today, I did not realize the Nobel Committee had affirmative action quotas it had to meet. OMG, I made an affirmative action joke. I guess I'll never win the Nobel Peace Prize. Seriously, they're going to boil over. The crazy's getting a little thick in here. And, you know, congratulations to President Barack Obama. Sincerest congratulations to him. And congratulations to the Nobel Committee for wanting to recognize what the... Because this isn't an award. I mean, it is. And it's an award to President Barack Obama. But it's also an award that I sense is based upon a desire to manifest the goodwill that the world at large has regained for America now that that pig-eyed, jug-eared, ignoramus, that little lout, George Bush, why didn't I win the Nobel Prize? I rid Iraq of a violent dictator who killed his own people. Where's my Nobel Prize? I recognize the sentiment, and I'm glad that that sentiment is out there, but as I said, thanks for trying to help, Nobel Committee. Now stop helping. Because I'm sure he's honored. I don't know what the rules are about the money. Maybe he gets the money after he's done being president. There's a lot of money involved. But I'll say this if no one else will. He didn't need it. He didn't need another reason for the right wing to ramp up a little bit more weird-ass hatred. Some of you listened to Michelangelo Signorilli on satellite radio. And you may have heard the clip of the person calling in, talking about calling for the armed revolution and saying that there's at least 200 people who are plotting a coup against the United States. This is not going to make them settle down. Of course, I don't know that anything will make them settle down, short of a treason charge and conviction and the appropriate remedy applied thereafter. Our good buddy Matt Osborne from OsborneInc.com, 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 has a post to that effect at Huffington Post lately. You can go over there, you can go to Osborne Inc., and you can see it either way. And the clip of the Michelangelo Signorilli moment is available in Matt's post. You might want to check it out. Isn't that Eric Erickson a funny man? He's a funny man. I did not realize the Nobel Committee had affirmative action quotas had to meet. OMG, that means oh my God. I made an affirmative action joke. I guess I'll never win the Nobel Peace Prize. Astonishing. The rodeo clown, Lonesome Rhodes, chimed in as well. And even locally, I believe you've heard the local creep and cretin who has the airwaves in the morning in southern West Virginia. I think you've heard him mentioned. He declared to his rabid dozen or so listeners that he had done as much for world peace as Barack Obama had and was more deserving of the Nobel Peace Prize than the President of the United States. It's getting crazy out there. Getting weird out there. And then, as I said, the rodeo clown chimed in as well.
Two premises of this program. One, that everything that you thought was real, you will see is completely bogus. Now, this one is a tricky one because I don't think anybody really thought that this was real, but you thought at least it had somewhat. It's like you. Everybody knows that the Academy Award is a, you know, is just in the bag for, it's a popularity contest. Got it. Everybody knows that. But at least there has to be a film that was made. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It can't be like, best motion picture, Barbara Streisand. Wait a minute, she just released a record. She hadn't had a movie in years. Yeah, I know, but she was hoping to make a movie. Okay? So if that ever happened, you would know, you would stop watching the Oscars entirely because you'd be like, okay. I mean, they're giving it to people who haven't even made a movie.
Yeah, this has to be seen as the last nail in the coffin of this.
This is the last nail in the coffin. It all.
Let's see. We are a minute and 10 seconds into the clip. It took them a minute and 10 seconds to get to nails and coffins and eliminationist rhetoric. You got to just love these guys.
So, it also is, to me, an opening, an understanding for a lot of people that these progressives are extraordinarily powerful, and this campaign of Barack Obama, this global campaign for Barack Obama, is done by global interests that have extraordinary power. They're very well connected, and I really think this is a validation.
Are they Bilderbergers, Glenn? Are they the Trilateral Commission? The Rothschilds? Is there something involving dancing naked in the moonlight in the Bohemian Grove? Huh, Glenn? Huh? Paranoia much?
And of all things, the Nobel Peace Prize should be turned down by Barack Obama and given...
You ready for... Yeah, you ready for this? This is the national equivalent of the weird little wingnut in Beckley saying, well, I've done more for world peace than Barack Obama. So, this is... never miss a chance, Glenn, to self-promote.
Extraordinary power. They're very well connected. And I really think this is a validation of all things. The Nobel Peace Prize should be turned down by Barack Obama and given... You ready for this? Oh, this one's going to make headlines. Should be given to the Tea Party goers and the 9/12 project. Because of the arrogance...
There's a really good chance of that.
Listen to this. Right. Because of the arrogance of the progressives that thought no one would stand in their way, that he would be able to accomplish everything. 2 weeks into his presidency, they nominated him for it and said, oh, this is going to be a slam dunk. And because of the Tea Party goers and the 9/12 project people that stood in his way and stopped him from accomplishing the things that he thought, please, I'm the Messiah. I'll be able to accomplish that.
Well, you know, Barack Obama and the Messiah do have something in common. They were both brown men. Yeah, shh, don't tell the fundamentalists that Jesus was brown like the president is. They won't take too well to that. He didn't have that blonde hair and blue eyes going for him, but we know that. Glenn doesn't. But then again, Glenn believes that when he dies, he's going to go to planet Kolob and have 3,000 wives or something like that. So he should talk about messiahs. I'm the Messiah. I'll be able to accomplish that. It's nuttery. And by the way, no, I don't have anything from what he said on the air. However, and I, you know, memo to journalists or so-called journalism organization. That thin little pamphlet that comes out about once a week, it's about as thick as a chick publications tract that you find, you know, one of those weird little fundamentalist Christian tracts that you find on the urinal in the men's room in the rest area. Newsweek. Newsweek immediately called who? Rush Limbaugh to find out what he thought about Barack Obama winning the Nobel Prize. It makes about as much sense as calling me. Why would you call Rush Limbaugh is it like going to the zoo to watch the monkeys throw the poo in the monkey cage? Is that why you call Rush Limbaugh for comments about Barack Obama winning the Nobel Peace Prize? Limbaugh told Newsweek, "The Nobel gang just suicide bombed themselves. Gore, Carter, Obama, soon Bill Clinton. See a pattern here? They are all leftist sellouts. Oh, my aching back. Suicide bombed themselves? Did you catch that line in the Glenn Beck clip where he said, oh, this one's going to make headlines? It's all PR. It's all PR flackery. It's all an attempt to, yeah, get people talking about them instead. And, oh, Jesus, they won, I guess. I don't know. And they have to one-up themselves. Glenn Beck says, please, I'm the Messiah. I'll be able to accomplish that. And that's pretty hateful. So necessarily, Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, has to ramp it up a bit and say, the Nobel gang just suicide bombed themselves. How does that even make sense? I'm just asking. And oddly enough, after hearing all this, you might be interested in hearing a little bit of prophecy. See, I'm not the only one who can do this trick. One of our Michaels, we have several Michaels, but one of our Michaels, this one being our Michael in Norway, home of the Nobel Prize Committee, I might add, said, wow, hey, Bob, Barack Obama awarded the 2009 Nobel Peace Prize. I can already see the conservabots getting their panties in a bunch over this one, even though some of them already have declared the Nobel Peace Prize Committee to be a bunch of nasty leftists just out to piss them off. Hence the Limbaugh quote, which was made actually after this email was drafted. So, you see what I mean? Perhaps this is true, as it certainly may seem that way, but in any case, good on them. I, for one, am amused. I would argue that peace at its core is a left-of-center value. So true. So why should we expect the Nobel Committee to please the political right? Whoever receives such an award by the shared nature of its purpose will result in some level of grumbling on the political right anyway. Damn peaceniks. Perhaps it may seem a little premature to award Obama the Peace Prize after just 9 months in office, though the Peace Prize is awarded to people who represent a force for positive change, regardless of their actual accomplishments by the time of the award. The Peace Prize is not merely an acknowledgement of a person's achievements, even though these are also recognized by this award. The more important purpose of the award is to motivate peaceful developments by encouraging people who show the will to be a driving force for peace. To elaborate, otherwise it would be difficult to give such an award to people like Aung San Suu Kyi, considering the current situation in Burma. It is the will for peaceful change that is emphasized, not necessarily so much the actual changes achieved. I would agree with the Nobel Committee that Obama has inspired a global optimism, reflecting a lot of the same values that the committee cherishes. As the representative of Torbjørn Jagland, Michael, you know how I am with names. Forgive me. Torbjørn Jagland already has declared the prize is awarded to him not only for his accomplishments so far in terms of his diplomacy, but most of all for the change of direction that the committee wants to encourage. In other words, this is more of an endorsement based on what Obama represents on the global stage for the purpose to motivate a continuation of this positive and peaceful approach. I have no doubt that the Nobel Committee already knew full well that this would become a controversial decision, and I'm sure they are not afraid to stimulate debate. You're probably going to hear from the right wing that the Peace Prize is nothing but a political tool, and in this they would be correct. It certainly is a political tool to stimulate positive, peaceful developments in the world, something only the right wing can label as derogatory. Anyways, congratulations. Sincerely, Michael. Michael in Norway. Tons of truth in that. Tons of reality in that. And lo and behold, there it was for all to see. this comment. The Nobel gang just suicide bombed themselves. Look, the Nobel gang also gave the Nobel Peace Prize to a guy who ordered the slaughter of over a million innocent human beings. Remember Henry Kissinger? So it's nice to see the Nobel Committee moving in the other direction, away from the people who order the slaughter, little attempted genocides. It's a positive step forward, I think. I don't see how you can argue around that. And there's more, of course. There's more of this lunacy. Here's a name for you. Floyd Brown. Floyd Brown. They haven't had an original idea since 1860. And Floyd Brown is living proof of it. Maybe we'll talk about it later in the program. Got a couple of lights blinking, a couple of spaces open if you want to jump in. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn. And I encourage you to jump in. Let's have a great conversation before the weekend kicks in and conversation goes dry until Sunday night at 9 p.m. with All Foxed Up and our buddy John Fox live from Australia, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday night. You know, because trying to bottle up your conversations that are happening inside your skull, bottling those up for a good 24 hours or 48 hours or a little bit less, that can be unhealthy. So light up the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. And email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Bob Kincaid, @gmail.com. You know what we're going to bump out with? Our buddy David in Tennessee sent this along. Just a sort of a reflection of right-wing weirdness. A little bit of Mr. Toby Keith. No, this isn't that one about putting a boot somewhere. This is a new piece of sick right-wing garbage I just thought you might find enjoyable. The video's really awful, but the song is equally bad. It's called American Ride. And I apologize in advance. Don't give me any grief for it, though. I have God Bless the USA by Lee Greenwood right here, and my finger's on the button, baby, and I won't hesitate to play it if you give me any grief. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Winter getting colder, summer getting warmer, tidal wave come across the Mexican border. Why back gallon is cheaper by the barrel, just don't get busted singing Christmas carols. That's us, that's right, gotta love this American ride. Both ends of the ocean burning, funny how the world keeps turning. Look, Ma, no hands, I love this American. Rocks off watching Desperate Housewife. Daddy works his can off paying for the good life. Kids on the YouTube learning how to be cool. Living in a cruel world pays to be a mean girl. That's us, that's right. Gotta love this American ride. Both ends of the ocean burning. Funny how the world keeps turning. Look, Ma, no hands. I love this American. Sing a note. Plasma getting bigger, Jesus getting smaller. Spill a cup of coffee, make $1 million. Customs got a thug with an aerosol can. If the shoe don't fit, it's gonna hit the shame. That's us, that's right. Gotta love this American ride.
Did you catch that? Did you catch that one? Spill a cup of coffee, make $1 million. See, I can that line alone lets me know where he's coming from. Imagine being well off as Toby Keith probably is, and making fun of a woman who, in her 70s, was forced to have her entire genital area surgically reconstructed because it was scalded into third-degree burns and worse, if there's such a thing, by a cup of coffee that the McDonald's Corporation knew was superheated because they had been informed by their marketing and accounting departments that if they superheated it, the smell of the coffee would go around the store better and sell more coffee. Spill a cup of coffee, make $1 million. What a jerk. I mean, honest. Oh, there's lots to hate in that. There's lots of, there's lots of proof of the relative. I would bet you that if horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner was to psychoanalyze that video, he could give us a pretty good idea of Toby Keith's IQ. And I'm betting it's no higher than the temperature of a comfortable room. Of course, that came off of YouTube. You can go find it. Toby Keith American Ride official music video. And of course, the fun part's always in the comments. One person running. Amen. One nation under one God. How do we go from that to two parties under corrupt, self-righteous egomaniacs or gods that have forgotten that they work for us? God help us. Well, you know, that's a terribly divisive motto, in addition to the fact that it shouldn't be in there anyway, because if you look at Article 11 of the Treaty of Tripoli, the United States is in no way founded on the Christian doctrine. That's what it says there. You're done. And, of course, the fundamentalist has to chime back in. According to the Treaty of Tripoli, we may not be. But what faith do you think our founding fathers based their views on? They were deists. It was Islam or Hindu. They wanted people to come to be free of oppression. So those religions are welcomed here. I say that loosely because the opinions about them. What? I think that our country was founded on Christian beliefs, and it doesn't matter what some treaty says. No, the treaty is it doesn't matter what some treaty says, because, you know, treaties are only the secondary level of the law of our land. I'm sorry, Moses and his 10 commandments, whichever 10 you happen to be pulling out of the air, because there's several different versions there. Did you know? Yeah, of course, treaties are the secondary layer of laws in this country. First comes the Constitution. Nothing can trump the Constitution. The Constitution trumps all. Then comes our treaties. Our treaties come second, and then come comes the statutes of the Congress, and then comes your state, and then your county and your municipalities. And that, right, there's a hierarchy. I think that our country was founded on Christian beliefs, and it doesn't matter what some treaty says. Our founding fathers decided what would be best for people to be free, and with the way people act, jeez. They would roll over in their grave to see that the country they fought to free has just found a different way to oppress its people. Yeah. You just know that's a white person writing that, right? All oppressed and everything. Help, help, I'm being repressed! Our buddy Michael, another of the Michaels. We have Davids and we have Michaels. Our buddy Michael, who is Kid A in the chat room, says, "Oh Lord, please, Bob, get that off your damn hard drive. I'll take Lee Greenwood any day over that shite. That was nauseating!" And that's why it won't be played twice, Michael. Mora, Toby Keith song. Oh my God, that's terrible! And then from David in Tennessee. Damn you! I tip you off to a disgusting Toby cut, and you credit me for it. Damn you! Grin. Sandra, Bob, dear God, this is awful. Another David. This one in South Carolina. Bob, just to balance this out, we need some drive-by truckers on the next break, please. Oh, okay, the home of the Nobel Prize is Sweden? I guess so. There I go again. It's Friday. Come on, cut me some slack. In regard to, Maura did let me know that the White House has announced that Obama will donate all the Nobel Prize money to charity. Oh, Jesus, you can hear that. You can hear the Fox News now, can't you?
What do you want to bet he gives the money to Acorn? He will. He'll give him millions to Acorn.
And from David in Tennessee regarding Flush and Miss America. Flush, as a judge for the Miss America pageant, please remember that Flush said recently that Hillary could not have served in the armed forces. Not the Marines nor anyone else has pants big enough for her thighs nor boots big enough for her ankles. David says, I'm sure all the young women will just love posing for Flush. And that's enough to put you off your dinner for about the next 3 weeks. And turn around, honey! Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Well, hey, Ed.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How about you?
All right. I got a little follow-up on, they may not be able to make panties big enough for Hillary, but they don't make false teeth mold big enough to mold for his damn mouth either.
There you go.
And Toby Keith, you exposed, you give the most exposure probably that anybody knew on him. I knew what, and he wears a stripe, a flag for a shirt and stuff like that.
Well, he's got the flag on his guitar.
Yeah, well, his mentality level is down as low as the bottom of a wheel when you think about some of the stuff he says and goes all out for this patriotic stuff. Wonder if he's been in the service. Wonder if he served his country. Wonder if he would serve it if he had the opportunity or occasion to.
I'm guessing the short answer is probably no.
That very few of them would. They sell that patriotic stuff to the right wing nuts, as you call them, and they eat. That's the thing that appeases them. They're in the market for. But let me tell you, you're right. You're dead on target on this. When Obama won this Nobel Prize, they really stirred up a hornet's nest in the right wing, or conservatives, or whatever you want to call them, idiots.
Yeah, morons works for me, Ed.
Yeah, well, that'll work. But I was totally taken aback when he won that. I didn't even know that he was being considered. Of course, I don't think they put out the names that I know of. But the list, it would surprise me, and I would have bet you 10-1 that he didn't win because of his length of time of service. But I think he's well deserving of it with what he's done to patch up the relations between these foreign countries. And as far as George Bush, if they had an anti-Nobel Prize, it would be appropriate for him. So, and, I think we talked before on this, but they spend $1 trillion, it's probably more than that, plus all the lives, but they're not, the right wing is not willing to spend close to 800 and some billion to heal and give people a decent way of life. And I've been watching a couple programs, and they've got people on there, Bob, that are going to die. We're talking about one person with kidney problems, a black guy, that is going to die within 2 weeks if he don't come up with some way to get dialysis. And we got people, you know, it's like the war. I don't think it's a thing that can wait. You know, either we get out of there, which I'm for. I'm against that war. I do not believe can turn out any other way except like Vietnam and those countries like that. I think that's the only way that can go, unless you just annihilate the whole country.
Well, Ed, you might be surprised to find out that you are on the same page, oddly enough, apparently, with the Obama administration.
Well,
I'm not kidding. There is, let me see if I can find it here. There is it's a story out of the, I'll have it in a second. It's a story out of the Washington Post, out of today's Washington Post. Just listen to this and see what you think. As it reviews its Afghanistan policy for the second time this year, the Obama administration has concluded, and this is a big concluded, the Obama administration has concluded that the Taliban cannot be eliminated as a political or military movement, regardless of how many combat forces are sent into battle. The Taliban and the question of how the administration should regard the Islamist movement have assumed a central place in the policy deliberations underway at the White House. Based on a stark assessment by General Stanley A. McChrystal, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, and 6 hours of debate among the senior national security staff members so far, the administration has established guidelines on its strategy to confront the group. The goal is to weaken the Taliban to the degree that it cannot challenge the Afghan government or reestablish the haven it provided for al-Qaeda before the 2001 U.S. invasion. In other words, that poll came out a couple of days ago where the American people said that the U.S. will neither win nor lose in Afghanistan, and the thing will just go on and on and on. And apparently, that's the position of the Obama administration, too, because you know what? There's no way. The minute you leave, the Taliban's going to, if you weaken the Taliban to the point where it can't hurt the so-called Afghan government, well, the minute you leave, it's gonna blossom like a flower, right?
Yeah, that's my opinion. And look at what's happening in Iraq after the troops, some of them withdrew. And here we are talking about negotiating with them. You know, how do you negotiate with somebody that's shooting at you? The reasoning is beyond me, and I've seen. You know, I was in under the Korean conflict, and I know what it is. I didn't see the guys get killed, but I've seen them buried at sea because we couldn't come back and give them, you know, ship them back home and so forth. And I really don't believe, unless somebody has got a family member and that there is death in that family from this thing, I believe we are callous to the point to where we do not have compassion for the people that's over there. And I'm not talking about you. I know you do. I've heard things you've said that let me know that there is sympathy there for them and that it didn't have to be. And that's the part that gets me. They blame us. Obama promised to stop this. Promise to stop that. We'd be out of Afghanistan. That we'd have the boys home. Why don't they ask why I'd keep turning around and ask George Bush why we're there? It was a stupid Republican that put this thing into play. It started the wheels turning on it.
Yeah, they basically, and I argued this. I've been argued this years before Obama won the election. That the whole reason that the Republicans were putting up, you know, the crop of losers that they had, and we wound up with McCain as the nominee, is because they didn't want the White House. They didn't want it. Their whole point was to booby trap the presidency so that they could holler, look, a Democrat lost the war. Makes sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know how it is. You don't take on, you don't sit down in a poker seat that's been losing all night. You know, if that's unless they change the decks and the players too. But I just don't know. I don't know what to think about the thing that's going on and the craziness that's in about everything you go. And it's just like Charles Rangel. You know, I met him at the Hyatt Regency in D.C. And that guy is something else. I mean, he's a very special person. But how come when we get somebody that is capable of moving some water and stirring some water, how come that they always screw up? Here today, we got a Nobel Prize winner. And they got this guy under the microscope. What in the world is wrong with the Democratic Party that they keep pulling these boobies like this?
I don't know. You know, Bart Kopp over at bartkopp.com, and I know you don't do the Internet, but has forever been asking, why can't I be part of a political party that doesn't constantly surrender? And you know, I get his point. You know, we even now, it's, you know, 2009, and we still haven't figured out how to fight back against these weirdos from the right wing. You know, Representative Alan Grayson from Florida, the guy who said, I apologize to everybody that's died. Him, you know.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I listen.
Well, he came up with another beauty, and our buddy Dennis just sent this along to make sure that I saw it. Alan Grayson has said, if the president has a BLT tomorrow, the Republicans will try to ban bacon.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I'll been to CNN.
And it's true, too, yeah.
Yeah, he walked right in on them, and he told them how he had apologized. You know, that's the most gutsy thing I've seen a Democrat do lately, and quite frankly, I'm very disappointed in the Democratic Party. And I mean, this is nothing new to you because you're on every night and you get the calls. But the Democrats is a bunch of sick puppies in my book. You know, they got the control of everything, and they don't know what to do with it.
They got power and they don't want to use it.
Yeah.
And the poster child for that are, you know, then the problem, of course, lies in the Senate. The poster child for all of that, the two prime examples, Max Baucus and Harry Reid.
Yeah.
Max Baucus is apparently deaf to the hue and cry of the people of the United States saying they want a public option in health care. So Max necessarily says, we ain't going to have one of them. And Harry Reid, has anybody heard from Harry Reid lately, Ed?
Yeah, he was on today.
Okay, I missed
it. Mumbling and jumbling, you know how he does. It sounds like he's got a mouthful of cotton. But Max Baucus is nothing but a traitor. He's another Shirley Love and Manchin and those guys. He is a double talker and a traitor to the party in my book. He from this county because time I got through with him on your program and talking at the stores and stuff, I damaged his vote, that's for sure. But I despise those kind of people. I don't think he's branded as a blue dog, but he should be. I don't know how you feel about him, but I don't have a bit of use for him. He don't show me any strength at all.
Well, and you mean Shirley, or Harry Reid?
Baucus.
Oh, no, I wouldn't throw a warm bucket of spit on Max Baucus. He's probably grateful for that, but
I don't think Harry Reid's quite as bad as he is, but Harry Reid is. I mean, he's a picture of weakness in my book. but of course we don't get to vote for him, do we?
No, but hopefully some folks in Nevada who do will have done with him. Because, you know, he's up for re-election next year, and apparently he's got trouble.
I think there's going to be a lot of them in trouble. You know, they ought to be if they're not. But Max Baucus, or whatever how you pronounce his last name, he certainly should be. Where's he from, Montana, Wyoming, or?
Montana.
Montana. He should be in a world of trouble up there. But I just want to compliment you on you doing a good job and right up to date on things that's going on. And I listened to part of your program one night there and got interrupted. You know, got a call about that time about the trouble the program's in. I hope it bails out, Bob.
Well, we've gotten past the immediate crisis, and now we're just in the monthly month-to-month worry portion of the program. So that particular crisis that was coming for October 21st is averted. Those bills are paid, and all the credit in the world to the Horn family for stepping up and making that happen. It was amazing to behold, and it was inspiring as heck.
Well, when I heard part of that, I wondered why, there couldn't be a sponsor that was big enough to sponsor your program. Why won't somebody jump on that? Are we that big of conservatives in this state?
In West Virginia? No, it's highly unlikely to happen in West Virginia. But if there's a company or something, corporate check writers are not much interested in liberal or progressive thought because they've already preconceived that they don't want any part of it because they're afraid because they're corporate and they know that left or liberal radio is not going to shy away from criticizing corporate America. That's why all of corporate America's money goes to the right wing. That's why they're funded as well as they are.
Well, I heard you addressing football a while ago, and Rush Limbaugh. Do you know that the I'll think of the team, and who's the one's got the lightning strikes on their?
The Chargers.
Chargers. Do you know that they donated more money to the right wing than all the other football teams together?
Oh dear.
Yeah, I would have never, but they, now I don't know whether that was as a group or of players and management or whether it was just management alone. They didn't expound to that at all. They just said that they gave more than all the other teams together. But I wanted to ask you one more, and then I'm going to get off here and free up the line a little bit and see what else is going on. What happened, you know, I heard on Situation Room that they were supposed to come on there about West Virginia and the coal hickey in Charleston here a couple of days ago. What happened down there on that? Just a demonstration, or was there any?
I'm not entirely sure what you're describing, but, the big news, and it is shocking news, frankly, and it's good news, is that in this discussion about Marsh Fork Elementary, and you know what that is, Ed.
Yes.
It sits there next to that big old toxic prep plant and below 2.8 billion gallons of toxic sludge. I can't imagine a child trying to learn in those circumstances. The big news out of that is that Senator Byrd has come out because Massey Energy said, well, we're not going to help build a school down there. We pay taxes all the time. That's not our responsibility. We pay too much taxes anyway. Well, Senator Byrd came along and said, shame on them, and blistered them for what he called, and it was a beautiful thing. He said, such arrogance suggests a blatant disregard for the impact of their mining practices on our communities, residents, and particularly our children. These are children's lives we're talking about. If Massey were not operating near Marsh Fork Elementary, we would not be debating what to do about moving these young students someplace safer. This is not the taxpayers' burden to remedy. This is Massey Energy's responsibility to address.
Right.
And all of us on this side who have been hollering for a new school for Marsh Fork for all these years, I mean, it just blew us away. And then lo and behold, what happened? Well, Senator Rockefeller chimed in and took up Senator Byrd's cause. And then Congressman Rahal chimed in, and he agreed with Senator Byrd. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, well, but Bob, the thing that's going on worse than that is where they're dumping this sludge and all these chemicals and everything that's in the coal mines back in where there is water, where they're pumping water out of it, and we're drinking it. That is worse than a few. Now, the few people that this is hurting, and that close to where kids are, is bad enough. But when you think of the contaminants in the water system, we're in a world of trouble. So, you know, sooner or later, that's going to show up in high blood, in kidney problems.
People are already dying, Ed.
Well, I didn't know that.
Down printer holler, people are bad sick from what's been done to their water. And lo and behold, it showed up on one of those Charleston news channels last night. That some of the most pathetic journalism I've ever heard. And I'll run that later, and we'll talk about it a little bit. But, of course, the coal company said, well, we didn't do nothing to their water. There's no, we had, and of course, they brought a lawyer on to say it instead of an engineer because no science would support what the lawyer was saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they're talking about, Mel got cut off, a couple times by Steve. I didn't hear it, but he told me about it. He was arguing Steve on these, where they back below these drain places and these hollows. Steve tried to claim that they didn't fill these hollows up and level them out and cut off certain stuff. And it came out in the paper the next day that they did it. So they're a bunch of liars, and Massey's done. To tell you the truth, I think he's got too big for his britches. And the coal miners are so gullible that the only place they'll get a lock on coal again, it's a big advantage to the coal miner if mountaintop removal goes through. You know, and they're stupid enough to stand up and fight the public for wanting that mountaintop removal stopped. I'm very disappointed in the United Mine Workers of America.
Well, they lost their way on this one. They think that because they got 700 people who work on mountaintop removal jobs who became members of the United Mine Workers, that somehow that's going to be the salvation of the UMWA, and it's simply not.
I don't. I'm certainly not following your train of thought on that.
Well, the UMWA has 700 members or so that are mountaintop removal workers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the UMWA won't say diddly against mountaintop removal, when the fact of the matter is, mountaintop removal's done more to take UMWA jobs than any environmentalist out there. An environmentalist has never taken a UMWA job. But mountaintop removal and Massey Energy daggum near destroyed the UMWA.
Well, let me tell you, I don't have any sympathy or compassion for mountaintop removal miners anyway, because look at, you know, before, look at the thousands of auto workers and the jobs, forever auto worker job, building the cars. There is seven other jobs that revolve around that, and rubber and parts and all this stuff that goes with the cars. So when you're talking about thousands of these people that's been laid off, and then here comes these mountaintop removal people that's doing more damage than you can shake a stick at, and crying and wanting somebody to sympathize with them. I can tell you where it's at in the dictionary, but I won't do it on radio.
I understand, Ed. Good to hear from you. Let me put you. Let me put you back on hold. Let you
sure,
listen for a bit.
I'd like to listen a while and see what's going on.
All right, sounds good. You just stand by. We'll put you back on hold and we'll continue with the program.
All right, thank you.
Good to hear from you. Have a great weekend, Ed.
All right, you too, Bob.
All right, take care. From here in Fayette County, that's our good buddy Ed. It's about 5 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a quick break and then come back to the phone lines are all lighted up. And we will come back for that. We'll take a little break and move forward through the other two-thirds of tonight's Friday on the Front Porch edition of The Horn. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Days gone, 6 days more. Till you walk back through the door. In that time, I cannot sleep, wondering if the waters still run deep. Have you stayed? If I'd have found the words to say, did we make promises we cannot keep? But do still waters still run deep? Love is like a river, sometimes changing in its flow. Some things you take for granted, some things you'll never know. That's when the doubt, like shadows creep, wondering still waters still run deep. Things change and life goes on. I face the days while you're gone. I face so rocky, running fast and steep. But do still waters still run deep? Love is like a river, sometimes changing in its flow. Some things you take for granted, some things you never know. That's when the doubt, like shadows creep, running still waters still run deep. Wondering if still waters still run
deep. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, 12 minutes past the hour, and we begin with hour two, as you noted in the intro there. And we will do so by going immediately straight back to the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And let's see who we've got here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Sandra.
Hey. How's it going?
I just wish that the Nobel Prize Committee would, I mean, I know I sound cranky saying this, but like I said, thanks for not helping.
Well, listen, when I first heard that, I thought it was an onion joke. I'm serious.
Well, even the White House did.
Well, no, I just thought, is this for real? Then I thought it was on a New York Times. Anyway, the whole thing was weird, and I just, of course, Orwell popped in my mind. Ignorance is strength, and,
right.
Slavery is freedom, and war. I mean, I understand. I mean, I don't, isn't it for concrete achievements? I'm sorry?
Apparently not. It's it can be for perspective achievement as well. It's like our buddy David in Tennessee said. He said the times are so dire and made so dangerous by the likes of George Bush, the Nobel Committee feel. He said maybe they should have issued this as a statement. The times are so dire and made so dangerous by the likes of George Bush, the Nobel Committee feels compelled to prime the pump and do all it can to get someone to do sensible things starting now.
No, it's really interesting because. You know, it puts the globalization in globalization because they're like, oh, to help this Negro along on a worldwide scale. I'm like, it was just something about it was just really disconcerting. Irrespective of the right, they're the usual. I could care less, but I'm.
Well, it's
not sure why they're priming this man so much. It's all becoming lost on me now, Bob. I need your.
I think they're trying to globalize him to the point that it will be very, very difficult to kill him.
Well, there's so many different.
Because there's a lot of people out there that want to do that.
No, I, that's what I'm saying. It's like know, a sort of a worldwide buffer of some type, but I don't know. It's definitely left me sort of speechless in a daze, the whole day, thinking about how odd everything is, because this man is presiding over wars, thinking about escalating wars, and, you know, I don't know, I have to say.
Well, it was particularly odd to me coming at the same time that I see this article in the Washington Post by Scott Wilson today about what the White House has finally sort of admitted to themselves about what Afghanistan is.
And what is that?
Our new mission in Afghanistan is to weaken the Taliban because we recognize that we can never fully defeat them. But do you see the I hate to use a word like this, the silliness of that position, because you can never weaken them. If there is popular support for them, they'll go underground and they'll pop back up like mushrooms after a rain once we're gone.
Well, it's just things like,
or the warlords will take over. It seems like there's some sort of movement toward understanding what Afghanistan is, but it's two steps forward. It's one step forward and two steps back.
Well, I mean, I know that the Nobel Committee, you know, especially in the last decade, they've had a tendency to severely politicize this particular award. But this just takes the cake. I'm sorry.
It is. I know. I couldn't believe it.
Well, you know. I
mean, granted, I don't have it written on my calendar, Nobel Peace Prize today.
Well, yeah, exactly. No, I agree with you on that. I mean, I saw they were giving them out for the various disciplines, you know. I hadn't really given it any thought about who might win the Peace Prize, but I surely didn't think it was going to be Obama. I'm like, really?
Nobody else is doing anything these days? Right. I understand.
You know,
and you've got all the usual right-wing weirdness, and out of it all, you know, this guy is so running for president. Out of it all, Mike Huckabee, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, I don't know, he came out and said, you know what, you guys need to shut up about this because you're sounding like, what did he say here? There will be an outcry from those on the right who will say that Obama's nomination made 2 weeks into his presidency is impossible to justify, but I think such an outcry will sound like right-wing whining. And, of course, he's right.
Yeah.
But the Eric Erickson guy with his, I didn't know the Nobel Committee had affirmative action quotas.
Well, no, see, now that's the same thing they did with Toni Morrison, too, you know. When it's on the world stage and you still get, oh, they got the award because they're black conversation. I mean, the fact that a man is president because he's black, I mean, it just flies in the face of, it's absurd, you know.
Well, yeah, if Barack Obama was elected president because he's black, why isn't he the 35th black president? You know what I'm saying?
No, I mean, the whole thing is just... No, I think it's... I'm looking at it more on a interconnected global scale. You know, I think there's some scary ass going on out there, and you need a hegemon, and ours is in decline. And the world, I don't know if you know about... You know, European history before World War One, there was no hegemon. You saw where that led.
Yeah, you had Britain in the constant position of we will oppose. You know, we will side up with anybody who's opposing the biggest power on the European continent.
Right, but it wasn't. You know, there was no hegemon in the sense that we have now, and. You know, in some schools of thought, you sort of need one to maintain whatever order we're used to, you see. And the U.S., whatever it's sliding into, isn't, at least for the short term, isn't that great for the world stability, if you know what I mean.
You know, all I can think is that the Nobel Committee is trying in its own way to... Undo. It's trying to undo some Bush damage too.
Well, yeah, there's that too. I mean, it's more sort of if you saw Obama. I mean, the dude looked like you know what's happening. He definitely looked like he was caught off guard. I have to say.
Well, he did. He did everything but say, you like me, you like me, you really, really like me.
Shut up. Yes. And I heard the speech, and he was trying to wrap in the unemployment, you know, trying to tie all big stuff together, you know? And it just was, yeah, it was just bizarre. Bizarro world.
You know, and maybe part of it is thank you for doing your part in not letting the global corporate world go completely bust and show what a fraud it's been from the beginning.
Oh, well, you mean his, that and the Lisbon Treaty, you know, they all trying to hold it together. I don't know. I don't really ascribe to the whole, New World Order. Hell, I just think that's a bit too simple. But there's definitely some larger interest in the U.S. at work, you know, trying to tap down the mayhem. And maybe that's a part of it, the peace prize. But it just all rings a little bit hollow because he's about to send 60,000 troops. Is that the latest?
Yes.
I'm like, I don't, that's what I mean. It's like, war is peace. What's happening?
Right, and that's what you know. That's why I referenced the fact that in 1972, that the Nobel Peace Prize Committee gave it to a guy who was a semi-genocidal war criminal, Henry Kissinger.
Yeah. Oh, please. No. That definitely was, you know, a low mark. I mean, I think the last time they gave one of any use was to the doctors in '99. You know, is it the Doctors Without Borders?
That was Aung San Suu Kyi, I think, was valid.
Yeah, I'm just saying, at least that there were, you know, there was concrete action associated with the prize, not this thought. We're thinking that we want you to do something in the future, so if we give this to you now, it will, you know.
Well, the other question is, who all was in the running? Do you know? Have you heard? I haven't.
Well, two of the people, well, I heard were nominated, but I really don't know. I couldn't tell you any names. I'm sure it's easy enough to find out. But, you know, the only other thing I want to say, I'll let you know, because you said you had phone calls for days. Did you hear in Indiana that 10,000 people applied for 100 jobs?
I saw that.
This is what I'm like, you know, that's scary. Those are scary ratios, you know.
And the fact of the matter is, that's, you know, that's Indiana today. It's Missouri tomorrow and Georgia 3 days from now.
And California. I mean, just some retail. I forget the name. They opened a store and they had like, you know, 280 for like 20 positions.
And before you do go, I was thinking about you last night because I saw this story out of California and immediately thought I gotta ask Sandra. This headline, Schwarzenegger threatens vetoes to get water deal. What's going on? He says he's going to veto hundreds of bills unless lawmakers agree on a comprehensive fix for the state's water system.
Oh, you know.
Are you following this?
No, I have to say I've been so busy. I don't even know. No, that sounds serious. I have to look into that.
Well, I know, you know, I guess at the close of the legislative session, there's a bajillion bills sitting on the governor's desk. And he said, I made it very clear to the legislators and to the leaders that if this does not get done, then I will veto a lot of their legislation, a lot of their bills, so that should inspire them to go and get the job done.
Well, and then when that fails, he just decides to turn on the poor, so,
So there's 700 bills awaiting his signature, and I mean, I have no doubt that the water system needs addressing, but...
Yeah.
But isn't that a function of the squirreled up initiative system whereby you can't ever raise taxes, but you can demand more stuff get paid for?
No, it's definitely out of control. I don't know what that story's about. All I know is that he's on his last days, and we have some literally a fascist running for governor. This Meg Whitman, or whoever she is, used to be the CEO of eBay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
She's promised to put in $100 million of her own money if need be. Okay, this is what I'm looking at, and I'm very scared because she's, you know, one of those who's that guy that's always talking about drowning the government?
Oh, Grover. Oh, she's a Groverite, Grover Norquist.
Just extreme, it, along with the social conservatism, too, all wrapped up in one. You know, put California on the right track, Bob.
Yeah, right. Because I'm seeing the statistic here. California has $67 billion of outstanding bond debt, and that's expected to grow by $44 billion over the next 4 years. Debt.
That makes this state pretty much done.
How's it not?
I don't know. You know, that those are sort of unbelievable numbers. I don't know how it's supposed to recover from that. Wow.
And the thing that blew my mind out of this, and I'm sure you will look it up and educate me a little bit, he's threatening to veto all of these pending bills when the water plan agreement hasn't even passed through the legislature yet. So it's kind of like he's creating an excuse to veto the bills on something that something that isn't even in existence.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what corporate entity might be behind this one.
Well, I'm sure someone will step up and be more than willing to privatize the entire water system.
Exactly.
That could never happen in California, could it? I mean, in light of the fact that the same folks who own Fiji Water also own a whole lot of the water in Central California already.
What? Is that true?
Yes.
Oh, God, no.
Or there's some sort of, yeah, there's some sort of an ownership nexus there. If you go to Mother Jones and read the Fiji water story of a month back, we featured it on the show, you'll find that connection laid out there. It's like pistachio farmers or something.
No, I mean, I remember that article because I was just appalled that water company is there and then the people in Fiji are having issues with getting fresh water. Themselves?
Yeah, water right. Everywhere, nor any drop to drink.
It's over the top. Well, anyway, listen, I'll let you move on, but have a nice weekend.
All right, you too, Sandra. Good hearing from you.
All right, bye.
Bye now. And onward we go. Or not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, not just the same old, same old. So, you know, I think that Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize because he won an election in America as a black man, namely the president. That seems like the only way he could have won it, because he's just so, I mean.
In other words, it's amazing that we're not already in full-scale civil war over this.
Yeah, although, you know, there are certainly a lot of people who love for it to be declared. They already got their guns ready and, you know, are going crazy at it. I mean, and to say nothing, the fact is that he even managed, after the announcement, to get Mike Huckabee to act like this is a normal and sane, that to, you know, say something sane. That quote you just said, that we can't complain about it, we'll just sound like, well, I mean, that's like the first sane thing I've heard that man say since I first heard of him.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
What's next is, like, Chuck Norris going to say that, oh, yeah, Mr. T was better always. Mr. T could kick my butt, or Bruce Lee's better than me. I mean, you know, that's how comically, you know, that's how much it is. It's like, that's how crazy it is on the Mike Huckabee scale of insanity, is that, you know, him specifically saying that, you know, let's keep it cool. Let's keep it cool. He's it's more than his fair share of whining. And, you know, we all, it's not that long ago that his buddy Chuck, you know, said, let's put coffee stains on the American flag as a protest.
Oh my, did I miss that one?
I think that might have been when you were out with the Smithfield flu there. When he was like the coffee rings on the, on the U.S. flag. I think that was when you were upset.
Okay, then help me because my eyes are rolling back in my head. He said, what? Walk me through this real slow-like.
Oh, I'd have to look up the exact quote here.
Okay, somebody will hit me in the email with it, then I'm almost certain.
Yeah, he's talking about protesting with selling protest flags with, like, coffee stains on it, or tea stains, because he's referring to the tea baggers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, he even got, Olbermann even hit him up on the worst persons in the world for it. Yeah, but I think it was when you were out sick.
Okay. And, our buddy David in Tennessee also pointing out that, for instance, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstaby, speaking out against railing against Barack Obama. He said that's Huckstaby pulling his sheep's clothing up over his neocon wolf fur.
Yeah, that's the apt description. I mean, between that and the whole growing fervor over.
And by the way, with regard to your earlier analogy, our buddy, you're in the chat room too. You see where Cossack said there that Bruce Lee actually did beat the stuffing out of Chuck Norris in real life.
That's why I mentioned it. Yeah. He did it in was it Game of Death, or I think was the one that he beat down on Chuck.
I'm not sure. That's a little bit beyond my film expertise. My martial arts oeuvre is
that kind of. I believe it was Game of Death because that kind of has played into the whole, you know, movie, you know, Norris could do, you know, anything meme that, you know, was popular. That, oh, Chuck let him win. Chuck did beat him because look at him, he died, or something to that effect. Yeah,
okay.
But it's almost, the thing is that whole Huckstaby thing, it's almost as insane as the whole Rush Limbaugh as owner of the Rams. You think L.A. is happy he's gotten over the losing the Rams yet?
Hey, Rush is good. You could have Rush.
I mean, he's so.
Well, no, but there, it was mentioned on the show the other night, Garrett, there really is a morals clause. And there's no way, yeah. There's no way that Rush Limbaugh could pass it.
Oh, but the thing is that, I mean, unless Jerry Jones is hunkering for somebody to make him look.
Well, you know, it was remarked, you know, maybe it was you and me talking. Jerry Jones made Al Davis look sane. Rush Limbaugh would make Jerry Jones look like a choir boy.
Well, at least with Jerry Jones making Al Davis look sane, at least Al Davis did some good stuff before he went crazy. I mean, he was going to.
Before he, before he wasted a number one draft pick on Sebastian Janikowski.
Oh, even I'm referring to the good, you know, back in like the '60s when he was the rebel and almost beat the NFL until all the other owners said, "Oh, we're gonna merge." It's no surprise he ended up going insane after that.
Yep, and yeah, it was Game of Death. And Chuck Norris doesn't talk about it.
Of course.
I love following the chat room at the same time we're doing the show. It's just too much.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, if Rush throws around enough money and he sucks up enough to most of these owners who are admittedly scumbags, most of them anyway, and like was mentioned earlier, yes, the Chargers, as a team, donate more than anybody else in the league put together to the Republicans. Rachel Maddow, she did a little short story on that on her show about a month ago, I think it was.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. I don't get that much. Well, I don't get MSNBC for starters.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because you know, God forbid you got the reasonably sane TV network.
Yeah, well, I've got all the Fox I can watch, too.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing here. Fox and CNN are on the the high-definition cable service here in Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
but not MSNBC and Fox and Fox and CNN and CNN Headline News. They're in the low 20s. MSNBC, channel 47, right next to the sports channels and the Spanish channels.
Yeah, see, for me, they're way up past that, MSNBC is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's even. Yeah, but Vegas.
You know, I don't think you. I don't think you get MSNBC till you buy the NFL Network or something with our system.
Oh God, yeah, that's pretty high up there in the channel numbers.
So yeah, no Olbermann. No, you know, of course. Then again, I don't even get Comedy Central. So.
You don't even get Comedy Central.
No, no Daily Show for me. No Colbert.
Sure. Ah.
Yeah.
God.
It's frustrating to say the least.
Yeah, I complain about that.
I got four or five channels of Electric Jesus.
Yeah, that's buried on the high digital.
No, see, for me, that's like channels 16 through 19.
Oh boy, yeah. I knew you had it bad, but boy, hey.
Yeah, it's ugly.
That's not ugly. That's just that's looking at Rush Limbaugh right in the face.
And all the Glenn Beck I can stand.
Yeah, that
which is about 2.5 seconds.
I've been complaining about having a la carte for cable channels, you know.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I think if American consumers were able to buy their cable a la carte, a lot of these channels would dry up and go away because those lower tier channels are there because they're cheap for the local provider.
Well, yeah, I mean, but like, you know, for instance, well, the thing is, they wouldn't be allowed to do stupid changes like how back. Wow, it's almost a decade now when G4, the video game network, and Tech TV, the techie, you know, computer network merged, you know, which was fine and dandy for a while, but now they're like Spike, which, well, that channel's, that story there, I mean, you know, the story of Spike is, you know, also another example of...
God, isn't that the one that started out as the Nashville network?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I thought so.
I mean, you know, but, and it's funny, in Canada, you can't do that. You have to stick with, it's law. You have to stick with what the focus of your channel is, and getting it changed is like, you know, crazy.
Well, you know, but here, they prop up whatever, and some of it's got to be ideology, too.
It doesn't even show cartoons anymore.
Yeah, let's don't get started on MTV. Hey, Garrett, I got to roll along. Got a whole bunch of blinkers, but good hearing from you, brother.
Good hearing for talking to you, too, Bob.
All right, you take care. Have a great weekend.
You, too.
Bye now.
Bye.
From Las Vegas, that's Garrett, and rolling onward here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Bob? How you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, great. What's happening? I think everybody listened to play with this nomination. I think this was about George Bush. I don't think this really had that much to do with Obama.
Well, that's what I said in the conversation with Sandra. This is as much a reflection of trying to save some shred of dignity for the United States after George Bush as it is for anything he's done or might do.
Yeah, I think Bush scared the shit out of the whole world so much. That you know, Obama, they were just like, praise whoever, you know.
Exactly.
Whoever we put up, you know, I think that's what this is about. I'm surprised he didn't get it on the first inauguration, you know, with Bush. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, I look back and I say to myself, are we kind of forgetting all the crap that Bush put us through? You know, I was talking to someone today about this. I said, people tend to forget, like, you know, look, let's go back to 1999, 2000, 2001. Even before the Iraq War, you remember how much violence was going on in the Middle East and, like, between Israel and Palestine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because he'd gone to sleep at the switch.
Exactly. Bush didn't come in when, you know, Clinton kind of was leading this thing into a good direction. Of course, you know, Rabin got assassinated. But Clinton was still kind of closing that thing off a little bit. Bush came in and told hands off, and we had bloodshed there. I mean, you know, you know what I'm saying. And it's like, oh, do we, as Americans, kind of forget, starting to forget Bush? We better never forget Bush. You know, this whole analysis of why Obama got this nomination. Bush, look back 8 years. Please, people, don't forget the crap that this guy put us through. You know?
Well, here, here.
Bro hated us.
And, it did, and you know, that goes hand in hand. Do you remember when that story about George standing there in the Middle East saying, God told me to hit Saddam, and I did. And now God's telling me to bring peace in the Middle East, and if you don't help me, I can't help you. Remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, lunacy.
I remember not just that, but other stuff. You remember the Crusade comment?
Y'all, sure.
How many people did he, you know? I mean, Bush made a mess of everything. And this whole thing, if you look at Afghanistan, you know, regardless of what people think about it, we don't know how many people, how many kids were radicalized from Pakistan border all the way down who we are now fighting because of George Bush in Iraq and whatever. That guy has caused stuff that we're going to be fighting for generations. I mean, for generations, you know? I mean, these guys are plotting right now just because of George Bush. You know, it doesn't even matter what Obama does next in Afghanistan or whatever. I mean, they're going to be plotting out probably for the next 50 years because their mama got blown up. Hell, I don't blame them to some degree, you know? You know, blew up my house and my whole family and two for like 20 or 30 years, you know? You know? Oh, and I didn't even get to 9-1-1, you know?
Yeah.
I was sick then. So, you know, it's crazy, man. But the bottom line is, you know, I guess the world's giving us an olive branch. That's where I see it. And I personally, Bob, I don't know if we deserved it. You know?
That is a valid question. And I think that's the question that Sandra was trying to raise.
Yeah. And then, again, we got to get past. See, this thing, you know, I'm always calling in about this, is that we got to get past the Obama thing. The Obama thing. People, too many people are like, you know, you can't have one guy bearing this cross of America. The black man, whatever it is, start to really be more broader in our outlook and realize we are at this point now because a lot of people, you know, I was talking about, you know, the CIA and stuff like that. We're talking about sins upon sins, generations. And to try to sit here and think that one person is going to solve this, you know, I just think it's kind of ridiculous. I'm not going to say it's unfair because he is the president. He does have a responsibility to do certain things. But I think it's really totally, totally unrealistic that if we think Obama's going to solve all these problems himself.
And well, you know, I keep thinking back to the very sage words of a cab driver that I rode with in Washington, D.C. About a year ago. It was right at the inauguration. And I said, so do you think things will get better now that he's president? And like most of the cab drivers in Washington, D.C., he was an immigrant. And he turned around. He didn't turn around to me. He kept his eyes on the road. But he said, my God, man, we elected a president, not a wizard. And there's truth in that. So, you know, how much can he do? And, you know, I see all this, Gary, through the prism of political realities. And one of the political realities is that the first job of a president in his first term is to get a second term. And that's when he hopes to get the work done. And it was true for George Bush. It was true for Bill Clinton. It was true for Ronald Reagan. You know, once you don't have the overarching fear of having to run for reelection, then you can push your agenda. And so, frankly, I don't know, you know, I think you're going to see some stuff. I don't think we're going to see the transformative change that some people bought into. You're not going to see that in this term.
This term is going to be about showing that he can be president and that he can, and look, he just earned the respect of the entire world. And you can't just, as much as the right wing wants to whine about it and spit on it, you can't just whiff that away. Congratulations are in order. But does this mean that everything's okay day after tomorrow? No, not by any stretch of the imagination, I don't think. Do you?
I would say this to all that. Thing really is with all of this is that at some point Obama will have to make a decision. You know, even though he said a thing where I'm going to be president of all the people. Well, my question is, if let's say 47% of the people, right wing or whatever, is just stone crazy and hell bent on policies that destroy this country, when do you say I got to be the president of 41% of the people? I mean, 51% of the people, and let these other people just, you know, come along for the ride. In other words, what I'm saying is, when do you start negotiating with these people, you know? I guess it's the same argument the right wing says you can't negotiate with terrorists. Well, can we negotiate with, and again, I'm not equating these people with, but what I'm saying to you, these people are hell-bent on terrorizing people. You know, you're getting terrorized because you can't get no health care. You know, I was thinking the other day, you know, you think about the KBR thing, the situation. Every single Republican voted, from what I understand, against the Franken Amendment. Which basically just saying, look, all the people accountable, you know, keep a girl from being raped, gang raped, or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Every time the Republicans stand locked, you know, it's just almost like they are hell-bent on anything evil. Anything that's good for people, they're against. And it's sometimes, Bob, it's so clean-cut. That it almost to the point where you gotta say, are these people even human anymore? I mean,
Bart Kopp published a list of the Republicans who voted in favor of rape, and that really is what they did. They voted against protecting women from rape in very dangerous circumstances.
But you know what the real reason why they did it? I mean, we all know the real reason. Anything that deals with any kind of lawsuit, tort reform, yada, 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 they're automatically against it because lawyers give money to Democrats. They ain't going to want them to get no jury award or anything, whatever, because they're going to just give more back to Democrats. They don't care about the freaking morality of it or if it's the right thing to do. You know, it's all politics, you know. At least that's my personal analysis. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just, that's about gut analysis because I don't think they've probably even looked at it. Probably just say, hey, this looks like, you know, we get into this situation. You know, the CIA and everybody else can be under, you know, but yeah, right, can be investigated off some videotapes, some doctored videotapes, you know, and nobody says anything. So, you know, Republicans, I don't know, man. They just, you know, Obama's a better man than me because I'd have been, you know, told him to go to hell a long time ago. I mean, I give him credit for having faith in human beings, the ability to change their hearts, you know. I give him that. Following his Christian tenement.
Whether, you know, and whether he's overly optimistic remains to be seen. I personally don't believe in singing Kumbaya with a bunch of people with knives in their hands. I like the way that quote that Dennis sent along that I mentioned earlier from Alan Grayson. If Barack Obama had a BLT for lunch tomorrow, the Republicans would move to outlaw bacon. And it's true. It's the same thing that I've said in a different way, that if Barack Obama rescued a kitten from a burning tree, the Republicans would be out there to criticize him for his bias in favor of cats.
I think though his election, you know, in terms of what right wing are going to do, they're going to do what they're going to do. But I do say, you know, people, you know, I've traveled a little bit around the world, and one thing I noticed when you go around the world, you know, I don't care what country you're in Brazil or whatever, that when you look at poor people and you look at blackness being, that's always synonymous with, you know, being downtrodden. Even if you're in a country, you know, even whites, you know, and whites, poor whites or whatever this and that, people don't realize how much that symbolism of America electing a black president. Because let me tell you something. I told you this during the election, but there are many black people. I had older black people who told me white people in this country are inherently racist. Never, ever, ever vote for a black man. Even Ahmadinejad, you know, he made that statement last year saying that America's too racist, I'll never vote a black man. Well, on November 8th, you know, we saw that white people are not inherently racist. Is a greater place than what Ahmadinejad and all these other people think of America. And I think that when you look around the world and other people looked at America and said, wow, they elected a black man. That threw a chasm through perception that people don't really, really fully appreciate. That's why sometimes I say, this thing really is bigger than Barack Obama. Because it's not so much a statement about Obama and what he's done, but it was a statement of American people. White people in Iowa who voted over him, over Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards, a white man who had been campaigning there for, but they saw something inherent that was good and right. Whether we, you know, he lives up to it or not, it's not really to me the point. I mean, it is be great. But to me, the bigger point is that people saw something greater. They got past their skin. And that is what the dream of Dr. King always talked about. And to me, that's the revelation, and that was the greatest thing that, you know, he was elected based on the content of his character, meaning that we had reached that mountaintop that Martin Luther King had envisioned. Yes, there are many valleys and springs and, you know, whatever we got to do in this new valley that we're in or whatever. But at least we've gotten to the mountaintop now. Yeah, we got a lot of work to do, but I think that is what we have to kind of always kind of remember what his presidency really was about. It was about the American people, you know, getting past something, you know, well, I won't say getting past something, but you know what I'm saying, that it was a broader, bigger thing that happened on November 8th. And hopefully, you know, we'll continue to, but I'm telling you right now, the right wing cannot stand what happened on November 8th, because it threw up, you know, it broke a perception that they thought they had locked. They thought they had right race. They thought they could keep, you know, people down based on a certain perspective. You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry if I'm talking too much, but you know what I'm trying to say.
There's no such thing as talking too much in conversation radio, Gary.
Well, no, I got to be careful. I'm always kind of conscious, you know, talking. But that's what I'm basically trying to say, is that this thing about this president at this time, this election, I don't know about other elections, but this to me was more of a statement of America than Barack Obama. Yeah, he ran a nice campaign. Don't get me wrong. He did everything right. But on November 8th, that was a statement about America. People. That's what it's about. And the only thing that's going to change this freaking country is that we got to continue to be cohesive. And see, the Republicans are going to continue to go off and try to divide us and make up all this crap or whatever, because they want to take us backwards. So I congratulate Nobel Peace Prize, whatever, for giving the American people the award, because that's who should have got it. And I think Obama said that today in his speech, I think, to some degree. So that's my little or whatever.
A well-reasoned position. And you know, I don't think my main concern, and it was echoed by in an email a few minutes ago from Jude. Is that, and it's been echoed by a couple of other folks, is that this ratchets up the danger. Jude said, it was the exact thought I experienced when the news came across the radio that President Obama had been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. I, too, unfortunately, began to sense the negative charge that would surround the cruel and hate-filled conservative Christian cult. Actually, how else could these people respond as they choose to live in a mental swamp?
Something happens to him now, they'll unleash something.
And, you know, Jude points out that we are moving through the swamp and not standing in the middle of it. And that's the, you know, that's the forward progress. That's the comment about America that you note, Gary, that it was there's no getting around that it was a monumental step forward. Now the question remains, we gave him the office. Now live up to our hopes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
say to you is, if the cross is too big for him to bear, who's gonna step up while he's walking that trail to help him live it up in terms of making the right decision? Shouting him down when he's going in the wrong, you know what I'm saying? Because I think personally the cross is too big for one man to bear. I just do. I mean, the country, the world, I mean, to give that to one person, I mean, 24/7, everybody's criticizing.
Well, was it Harry Truman who said he would not wish the presidency on his worst enemy?
Yeah, but okay, and I understand that, but in this time, I would say probably let's amp that up 3 or 4 times over.
Right, and that's, you know, that's 1945.
That was a bad time, too, you know.
So. Yeah, but it may be too much for one man to bear, and it may be, as we've discussed, it may be that the system itself that was envisioned by our framers is not sufficient to the world in which we live. And I don't say that blithely, and I don't say it lightly. But our Constitution really is not designed to deal with crises unless there is a profoundly willful and strong person in the executive branch and a legislative branch that is willing to move with him or her.
Yeah.
And that's what remains to be seen. And the sad thing is, you know, it's October. It's the ninth day of October, Gary. We are running fresh out. You know, look, Congress is going to call it quits here real soon for the year. And they'll go home to their districts and they won't come back and reconvene until January. And with that in mind, you know, stuff like health care, it's got to happen. It's got to happen soon. I've got some audio from Alan Grayson down in Florida that's absolutely, it'll raise up the little hairs on the back of your neck to hear it. But we got to quit playing footsie with this stuff. This is no time for fancy footwork. This is time to, you know, put one foot in front of the other and slog through. Well, there's that word that Rumsfeld used. I'm sorry.
Well, see, this is the mindset that we're going to be on, because my thing is this, you know, a lot of people saying, well, he's taking on too much, doing health care, got 2 wars, you got an economic thing or whatever, this and that. And look, I commend him for going through health care, because look, he said he was going to do health care in his first term. That's what he said. He sidelined the Republicans and said, I'm pushing through this year. Because he looked out and said, hey, I got to get through, you know, whatever. Now, because of just the political capital he had or whatever. And pushing it through, something that has not gotten through in, what, 60 years.
And that's the point. And if it doesn't happen between now and January 1, it does not happen in 2010, Gary. Because that's a midterm election year and nothing happens.
Yeah. Well, I feel confident it will happen. My only concern is that what kind of public, they'll have a public option in it, but the question is what kind of public option? Will it be a trigger? Will it be?
But see, a trigger, that's the thing though, Gary, a trigger is not a public option. A trigger is a phony baloney thing, that will be used to manipulate the fact that there will not be a public option. Because we will never pass that trigger boundary. Because then we'll have to redebate it.
Yeah, well, and see, that's what I'm saying. That's my concern. I'm concerned that fall back on the trigger. I don't think they're going to fall on the trigger because I think they know the lesson. You know, I think the Democrats know. First of all, I think the Democrats pretty much know if they don't have a public option, they're losing a bunch of seats next year. I think they know that.
I hope they know that.
Pass health care. Huh?
I hope they know that.
No, I think they know that. I think they know that they have to. I think the political winds have changed. Even when you see, let me tell you why. Because you see, I think Bobby Jindal has come out with a statement in terms of supporting health care now. Because what has happened, from what I understand, is that somebody like Arnold Schwarzenegger obviously has come out, is that they're starting to realize that, you know, because they're looking at the Canadian model. Because, you know, the Canadians, when they first rolled out their health care, from what I understand, because I have some friends who are in Canada, they started state by state. I mean, province by province. And that's how. So I'm thinking that's probably what they're going to do here, because they feel like they probably can get some regional support, you know, by saying, hey, you know, we'll get your state, yada, yada, yada. Because a lot of these states are going broke, and they need to reform their health care. They know that whatever they got right now ain't working. So, see, the Democrats have a lot of leverage right there on a state level. So I just got a gut feeling they're going to go with the state-by-state option. And, you know, I think that's what they're going to do. But I'm pretty 100%
sure. Well, that, and wasn't that part of what Dennis Kucinich proposed? He proposed it in the House, an amendment to a bill that would allow the several states to enact public options of their own, by their own legislatures.
Yeah. Well, I was reading something that, what's the guy's name, Lawrence McDonald or whatever, from Huffington Post, he was saying that the state-by-state thing is a terrible way to do it. It needs to be a federal thing. I forgot what his...
I think it does, too, because basically you punish people based upon the accident of where they happen to live. You know, what if New York has a public option that is basically universal single payer, but, you know, Alabama does nothing, or Georgia does nothing, or Mississippi does nothing? You can't do it on a state-by-state basis, at least from that perspective, because it leaves members of the it leaves people disadvantaged by political hackery at the mercy of those political hacks. Because frankly, the Southern Baptist
states will move. Sorry,
I was going to say the Southern Baptist Church and the Wingnuts come out in Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi. And well, you know, too bad, little baby. You were born in Georgia, Alabama, or Mississippi. You'd be fully covered until you died if you had happened to have the good fortune to have been born in New York. And we can't say that to America, you know, any more than we could have said in the 1960s that we'll leave civil rights up to the several states, which was of course the argument of the Lester Maddox and George Wallace crowd.
I think this thing is going to come all the way down to Ben Nelson and Olympia Snow. That's my personal opinion.
Well, Ben Nelson just got a little bit embarrassed. I don't know if you noticed this, but the Nebraska Democratic Party put together their platform, and their platform contains clear language demanding a public option, which puts Ben Nelson directly at odds with his constituents.
Great.
And with the power structure of the party that put him there.
Yeah, because I think he really is, you know, I know a lot of people jump on Max Baucus, which is rightly so. But I think that, you know, from listening to a lot of his comments of what I've seen, this guy's just waffling in the wind. I mean, he's going to go which way the wind blows when the tide comes.
Right, but Ben Nelson's the guy who came out and said he might not oppose a filibuster of it.
Yeah, I'm saying he's talking a lot. I think, I don't know, my gut feeling this guy, he's, you know, if I was in a poker game, this guy's bluffing. I could be wrong. I think the problem people have been Nelson and maybe one other, I forgot the other guy's name, not Montana or whatever. I think the Democratic government in Montana, so maybe we'll have a little say there. But I just got this feeling that it's going to be very hard for one guy in a small area, you know, the country, to be the one person blocking health care. If the Democrats play it that way, you know, then how to talk about stripping chairmanships and all sorts of kind of stuff. I don't know. I don't see. I mean, how arrogant could you not be? You know what I'm saying? I mean, that you're going to stop.
Well, the fly in the ointment, though, Gary, is the leadership in the Senate. And frankly, it would take a whole lot to convince me that Harry Reid is leading in the Senate. He's not, because that's when you go and you do that arm twisting on the Ben Nelsons and the Max Baucuses. Hey, Max, you enjoying this committee chairmanship you got? You're getting a lot of money out of it. You're very well paid. You want to keep it? Then there better be a public option in that bill. That's what's called leadership. God knows the Republicans exercised it. They knew what they wanted to do, and they did it, and they didn't ask for anybody's apologies or permission. They did it. Now, the fact that they were crazier than sprayed roaches doing it doesn't take away from the fact that they did it. On the other hand, here we are. We got power. And what do we do with this?
Well, I think that, maybe Rahm Emanuel or whatever it is and this and that or whoever, I think the Democrats are, I could be wrong, but I think that they are starting to get a message that, you know, hey, this backlash, so to speak, if we realize public option, is not really going to amount to votes lost. And if anything, it may be, it'll give us votes gained. And I think that, I'm hoping that, and I do actually think that looking at just what I'm seeing, just, you know, just kind of understand a little bit about how America works. I think the public is moving a little bit more toward that public option. I think as they get to know about it a little bit better, they're saying, hey, even though the way the public option is now, it's not for everybody. So, which is what I don't like. I think it should be, you know, because I don't want to give any more money to the insurance company. I'll jump in the public option tomorrow. You know, but that's the only thing disturbing to me, the one that they're going to be limited to who can get it. So, you know, we'll see, but I think in the end, I think they're going to get the health care thing through. I think that will get us to some of this other stuff that we, you know, we need to get to. And as far as jobs and all other kind of stuff, those jobs aren't coming back. So, I mean, people can just forget those. We have to start looking at new industries that are growing, retraining people, because those jobs are gone. Industries have changed or whatever. So there's still a lot of work to do. Like I said, you know, we're not in the valley now. We might be over the mountaintop, but now we got to look at this new valley and realize we got to start. You know,
got to keep marching.
You know, planting the seeds and doing cultivating the land the right way. You know what I mean?
Exactly, Gary. Good to hear from you, and I hope you have a great weekend.
All right, you too, man.
All right, take care.
Okay,
bye now. It's our buddy Gary, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Gonzo, greetings. Where's your Nobel Peace Prize?
Now, nah, stop that. I'm next
year.
You've
been working longer than he has at, you know.
Yeah, but I'm next year.
Importance of diplomacy.
I'm next year.
Next year, okay. You know,
I'm like the Cubs. Maybe next year.
I was really kind of caught off guard when this morning. I hadn't had the TV on yet in the morning.
Half of America went to the Onion.
I the TV to put on CBS to watch The Price is Right. And instead Obama's talking about how gracious he is of a Nobel Peace Prize, and I'm thinking, how long was I asleep for? I thought this was Friday morning. What's going on here? What year is this?
Yeah, you look. You kind of look down towards your chin for the Rip Van Winkle beard, and
yeah, I was a little.
But I think Gary's right. This really does have a lot to do with George Bush.
That's exactly what it is. That's as soon as I heard it, I was like, he got the award for not being Bush, and that made me think. I even put it on my Facebook and got a lot of thumbs up for it. That I knew the bar was set low because of Bush in America. I didn't realize the bar was set low on Earth because of George W. Bush.
On Earth.
The Europeans would have higher standards than, wow, he speaks complete sentences, and he actually believes in using his government appropriately. He wins an award. Like
lest we somehow minimize that, that is a radical sea change. That was almost an entire decade, Spike, of that little pig-eyed, jug-eared lout.
I know.
You know, there's an old saying that, you know, that somebody's such a up that he could up a one-car funeral. Or a one-car parade. That's George.
Yeah,
you know, I don't care how many times his baby brother comes out and says, you know, we got to get over hating on my brother. The fact of the matter is, his brother wasn't up, you know?
We'll get over hating his brother around the same time it took all of them to get over blaming Bill Clinton for everything.
Well, there's...
I always laugh when they turn around and they're like, well, Obama's the president now, you can't blame him. It's like, well, how long did you guys pawn everything off on Clinton?
Yeah, here it is. Check this out. This is real live, honest-to-goodness audio from that phony BS morning show network, Fox. It's Brian Kilmeade talking to Jeb Bush, about Jebby's, big brother.
I guess some people think, I was listening to some of the Sunday shows, that we're too focused on our debt and we should be focusing more on spending. Here's what Steny Hoyer says. He says he knows who's to blame for all this. Today's new deficit estimate for the fiscal 2009 shows the result of two things. Fiscally reckless policies by the Bush administration and actions taken to rescue our nation's economic collapse. While the later was absolutely necessary, the former was both unnecessary and incredibly damaging to our nation's fiscal outlook. It's been 10 months. Should Leader Hoyer be looking backwards? And is he accurate?
I was on the plane coming up to Washington yesterday, and I heard someone complaining that their child's acne was because of George Bush. And, of course, last week the Olympics didn't come to Chicago. That was my brother's fault. And at some point, people are going to have to put on their big boy pants and assume responsibility for the great challenges and opportunities our country has. And I don't know how much longer responsible leaders in Congress can continue to say these things.
Well,
all right. I won't be able to blame George Bush for anything, but can I still blame Neil Bush for the Stevenson loan scandal?
Or bringing the clap home to his wife? Sure, why not? But
I forgot about that one. Yeah.
Jebby. George looks like Poppy, and Jebby looks like that hateful old pearl clutching beast, his mother. And he acts like her too.
Because
you're going to have to put on your big boy pants now, George. Big boy pants? And assume responsibility for the great challenges and opportunities our country has? That's the Republican Party in a nutshell, Spike, because they deny reality.
Oh,
they refuse to live in a real world.
Why do you think they basically have started creating their own bogus institutions of, quote, higher learning, like Bob Jones University and Liberty?
And don't forget Patrick Henry.
Okay, Patrick Henry, I would make the argument at times Lehigh University plays on the edge with being part of the fringe of the university institutions, but...
But see, there's a reality. There really is, Spike. There's a reality at work here. And one of those, I remember when the Bush tax cuts were being debated, and I remember people who actually, the really wonky numbers guys who said, listen, you don't begin to comprehend what these tax cuts are going to do to America, because the chickens don't come home to roost till 2010, 2011, 2012, long after George Bush is gone and so is the money.
Yeah, I remember those people arguing for that, and they were really squelched down by the...
Why do you hate America?
The uber-libertarian groups that run radio and television in this country, who really are borderline anarchists in their belief of basically no taxes whatsoever and no government whatsoever. That's my check. That kind of borders on being anarchy. Which kind of gives anarchists a bad name, because even they believe in more law and order than libertarians. And of course, everyone was marginalized who had any criticism of those tax cuts. And, isn't that amazing? Those people were right, and the ones who played along and played the good company man, they were wrong, as usual. Which most yes men always are anyways. That's why they're yes men. They can't think for themselves. Put it bluntly.
Well, and look, yes, man. Yeah, okay, I'm sorry, you did it to me, Spike. I mean, you pulled the words right out of my brain.
I mean, that's really what we got, was the media that was, first of all, quote-unquote world of journalists, in the broadcast world, which is where the majority of Americans get their news at. They don't read it. They listen and watch it. And most of them have gone from at one time being the watchdogs over the powers that be to the lapdogs for the powers that be. And when you don't ask tough questions, when you don't challenge authority, bad things happen. And the checks and balances are out of order and things fail. And that's exactly what has happened to us. It's taken us down this road. I mean, it's beating a dead horse into the ground, but I mean, the fact that more people in this country are obsessed with seeing a famous rich girl's vagina getting out of a sports car over, you
which
know,
is which
what,
is in its
what's going on with that,
right, which is in its own jib jab way featured in that stupid Toby Keith video, the audio of which I ran earlier this evening. Oh my God! Now you know you just touched on something where you know TV is concerned, and it dovetails perfectly with a comment that I received from our buddy Reverbo a couple of days ago, talking about the difference between radio and TV. He said, "I've always been a radio guy, not professionally or anything. It's my age, I guess, and it's always been my favorite medium. TV, this is the operative phrase here. TV holds you hostage too much. It dominates your environment, while radio complements it. I don't have to sit there and stare at the damn radio. Whoever decided it was a good idea to put TVs in restaurants, for instance, should be alligator food."
You know, TVs and bars have really ruined bars. And go to a bar, and more often than not, people are all staring at whatever's on the TV and talking about it or whatever. And, like, let the cable go out, and now everyone in the bar has no idea what to do. Like, we're supposed to talk to each other about other stuff other than what's on the TV. I was in a bar once when the cable went out, and it was like a dumb bomb went off, and no one knew what the F to do at this point. Imagine if you went to Ireland and you put a TV in a pub. They'd take you out into the alley, and that would be the end of you forever. we're kind of an enslaved nation, an enslaved more to anything. And now I sound like very, very far left, but we're enslaved to advertising. I mean, how many women, especially, and you get guys to this, but mostly women, Super Bowl Sunday, well, I just watch for the ad. What, are you an idiot? That's the thing you shouldn't want to watch. That's the thing you should be tuning out, not, this game means nothing to me. When are the advertisements coming? I'm surprised I have hair left, because, you know, when I hear that, I want to just pull it out and maybe gouge it in my eardrum so I don't have to hear it anymore.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling. That's all I can say. I know the feeling.
But you know, yeah, you can work on a car and listen to the radio. You can multitask with listening to a radio. TV too, they're always telling everyone for any little thing, stay at home, that's the safest place, stay at home, watch TV. When a snowstorm's coming, although with snowstorms you really shouldn't be going to work. They should be closing America down for, you know, 6 to 36 inches of snow. Far too many stores in this country stay open to, you know, appease the few idiots with a Hummer who are going to come out in the snow.
Well, or the people who were too late getting out to buy their bread and milk and eggs. Everybody, like I've said before, everybody apparently eats French toast during snowstorms.
But, you know, it's amazing, and it's also amazing how many people have to go to, like, a Kohl's in the middle of a snowstorm, or, you know, they have to go to a Starbucks, you know. There's businesses that have no business being open when the weather's bad. I guess I'm as guilty as anyone else at times of patronizing businesses in a snowstorm when I shouldn't, but it's ridiculous that, you know, if we're not, you know, making money for corporate America, we're a slave to their advertising. Sure, they give us some money, but we're almost at this point, we've become more like the sharecroppers. We're not slaves, we're not really free either. That's kind of what's happened to us at this stage of the game, where we've come down to this dead end. I read a lot of Canadian news, and especially on my Twitter, I put up a lot of links to some of the better stories about America that I have to read from Canada. And I got a feeling I'm going to be proven right very soon that things are going to get worse. I keep reading about how many more foreclosures are coming. You thought last year was bad. Just wait. By the way, here's the best part of all. So I had to renew my unemployment recently, and now I'm in limbo because the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania doesn't have a budget. Between the fact that we have an inept Democratic Party trying to work with a party of no, and no one can seem to figure this out. And also, it helps the longer you keep people from actually getting their money, the more you can claim, hey, things are better than we expected. Hey, look, there's only this many people on unemployment.
Yeah, look, if they go off the rolls, they're not even there anymore. They're invisible.
Yeah. So I got a feeling, you know, once we get into another quarter and they start giving all of us our unemployment money eventually in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which that could be really screwing with the statistics right now when you have a state with no budget, meaning nobody gets new checks from the state government. The unemployment's way higher than they think. It's just all optimist baloney for the top 1%. The chickens come home, the roost won't be the appropriate term to say. When things really hit the fan, when this all comes through, I just got a feeling things are going to be far more worse before they get better. I just wish, I wish there was some sort of a Nobel Prize winner out there in this country who could, you know, wake up America and explain to them in common sense, corporate America's been screwing us for a while.
That's a very astute observation, Spike, because the fact of the matter is there are people out there, and I'll go ahead and put my own bias into this. I know people, for instance, just this year, my friend and fellow worker against mountaintop removal, Maria Gano, won the Goldman Prize, and it's often referred to as the Environmental Nobel. And she won it, and then a couple of years ago, my good friend Judy Bonds of Coal River Mountain Watch won the Goldman Prize. And the work that's being done on the ground that could change an entire region like Appalachia is deserving of consideration. I read earlier that it has not been determined what charity the Nobel Peace Prize money will go to. But I would, you know what? I would love the ultimate finger in the eye, would be for Barack Obama to give it, to give the money to, Green for All. You know, that's the organization that Van Jones started that works on green jobs and a new green economy. Because you know what? Glenn Beck would spontaneously combust. I mean, people would have brains all over their TV screens if that happened.
Well, he might move up to kill him.
Well, okay, not brains, but whatever those thin gray settlings are between his ears that pass for him.
He might just snuff out another animal on his show and say, oh, no, it was fake.
Nah, that's a rubber one. Oh, and speaking
of mine to the bad edit.
Oh, and speaking of which, did you catch this, that he's still trying to kill the... did Glenn Beck rape and murder a 10-year-old girl in 1990 website?
No, I did hear him on his show reference the references to his mother's suicide.
He's trying to shut the website down, and this is some beautiful, beautiful language, Spike. He knows he can't file a libel suit over it because, he's a public figure. You know, and under the terms of Falwell versus Hustler, you can do this. But the beauty in this is the response from the guy who put the site up, because Glenn Beck went crying, and there's irony in this too. He went crying to an international legal body, the international body that governs it's the World Intellectual Property Organization, and they govern domain names. Now, here's a guy who hates the United Nations. Here's a guy, we're fighting against the one world government and that multinational, the communist Barack Obama. But he's gone crying to them, trying to get the site shut down. And the response that came from the guy running the site is just beautiful. This is the language of the response. There's no indication that the respondent has intentionally... it attempted to confuse anyone searching for Mr. Beck's own website, nor that anyone was unintentionally confused, even initially. Only an abject imbecile. I got to work imbecile into the show again. That's too good a word. We've been relying entirely too much on Moran. Only an abject imbecile could believe that the domain name would have any connection to the complainant. We are not here because the domain name could cause confusion. We do not have a declaration from the president of the International Association of Imbeciles that his members are blankly staring at the respondent's website wondering, where did all the race-baiting content go?
We are here because Mr. Beck wants Respondent's website shut down. He wants it shut down because Respondent's website makes a poignant and accurate satirical critique of Mr. Beck by parodying Beck's very rhetorical style. Beck's skin is too thin to take the criticism, so he wants the site shut down. Beck is represented by a learned and respected legal team. Accordingly, it is beyond doubt that his counsel advised him that under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, no action in a U.S. court would be successful. Accordingly, Beck is attempting to use this transnational body to circumvent and subvert the respondent's constitutional rights. You gotta love that.
You gotta love anything that involves intellect, and Glenn Beck saying he needs help with intellect. The irony in that, but I love how it's worded. I mean, who's he kidding? He's made a living using that exact same loophole, essentially, in the law.
Well, and that's the best little line out of the whole response. The owner of the website has merely presented Mr. Beck with a mirror. If Beck does not like what he sees, the respondent is not to blame.
Yeah, I mean, the respondent didn't call up his wife and poke fun at her for having a miscarriage or anything like that. I don't know who might have done that in their past career. Oh, probably Mike. But karma, you know, it goes around, comes around, as the old saying goes. And certainly, he's going to get his eventually, but I got a feeling someone wrote an article, I think it was on Huffington Post, I can't remember where I read it recently, where because he's number two in ratings there behind only O'Reilly, and he's really kind of crushing Hannity, essentially, in viewers, they're probably going to move very likely to a later time slot because they think they might have a new number one in him, which would be really great. Because, by the way, no one hates someone moving in on his turf more than O'Reilly. This would be great. If you thought O'Reilly versus Ann Coulter and who sells more books was great viewing, just wait until you have these two duking it out for who's number one at the network. That alone would be worth watching that network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday at the Civic Memorial Armory. Yeah. Steel cage death match. Yeah. Hey, Spike, good hearing from you, brother. I got to roll on.
All right.
Take it easy. Calling from the Toby Hanna, Pennsylvania area. That's our buddy Spike. And I want to go to something now, because there's been reference, I referenced earlier this comment from Representative Alan Grayson of Florida, that if the news went out that Barack Obama had had a BLT for lunch, the Republicans would move to ban bacon. And there's truth in that beyond truth. With that in mind, I want to share some more Alan Grayson with you. This is amazing stuff. This comes from yesterday, October 8th. Remarks on the floor of the House by Representative Alan Grayson, putting a little perspective, if you will, on the whole health care debate. I admire this man. I don't know what votes he's made that I don't agree with. I do know that he is signed on as a co-sponsor of H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act, so that gets him big marks in my book. And I do know that he wants some level of meaningful health care reform. I was told that he hasn't signed on the H.R. 676, or what was H.R. 676, the Medicare for All Act, which is the most sane and rational and immediate fix for the problem, universal single-payer health care, Medicare for All, in other words. Maybe he has by now. But for anyone who will stand up and look at the right wing and tell them to eat it and smile and sit there and watch them while they munch, this is the kind of thing, you know, we had a conversation on the show last night with I believe it was another Alan from Florida, talking about why he had given up on the Democratic Party. And I don't fault him one iota for the reasoning that he gave. But if I may be permitted, what you're about to hear is the reason I haven't, and I can't. Because, well, frankly, because he's because this guy sounds like the kind of Democrat that I was raised up to believe the Democratic Party should be. I give you Representative Alan Grayson from yesterday on the floor of the House of Representatives.
Mr. DeFazio of Oregon. Without objection, the gentleman is recognized for 5 minutes.
Madam Speaker, I have words for both Democrats and Republicans tonight. Let's start with the Democrats. We as a party have spent the last 6 months, the greatest minds of our party, dwelling on the question, the unbelievably consuming question, of how to get Olympia Snowe to vote for health care reform. I want to remind us all, Olympia Snowe was not elected president last year. Olympia Snowe has no veto power in the Senate. Olympia Snowe represents a state with one-half of 1% of America's population. What America wants is health care reform. America doesn't care if it gets 51 votes in the Senate or 60 votes in the Senate or 83 votes in the Senate. In fact, America doesn't even care about that. It doesn't care about that at all. What America cares about is this. There are over 1 million Americans who go broke every single year trying to pay their health care bills. America cares a lot about that. America cares about the fact that there are 44,780 Americans who die every single year on account of not having health care. That's 122 every day. America sure cares a lot about that. America cares about the fact that if you have a pre-existing condition, even if you have health insurance, it's not covered. America cares about that a lot. America cares about the fact that you can get all the health care you need as long as you don't need any. America cares about that a lot. But America does not care about procedures, processes, personalities. America doesn't care about that at all. So we have to remember that as Democrats. We have to remember that what's at stake here is life and death, enormous amounts of money, and people are counting upon us to move ahead. America understands what's good for America. America cares about health care. America cares about jobs. America cares about education, about energy independence. America does not care about process or politicians or personalities or anything like that. And I have a few words for my Republican friends tonight as well. I guess I do have some Republican friends. Let me say this. Last week I held up this report here and I pointed out that in America there's 44,789 Americans who die every year according to this Harvard report published in a peer-reviewed journal because they have no health insurance. That's an extra 44,789 Americans who die whose lives could be saved. And their response was to ask me for an apology. To ask me for an apology. That's right, to ask me for an apology. Well, I'm telling you this. I will not apologize. I will not apologize. I will not apologize for a simple reason. America doesn't care about your feelings. I violated no rules by pulling this report to America's attention. I think a lot of people didn't know about it beforehand. But America does care about health care in America. And if you're against it, then get out of the way. Just get out of the way. You can lead, you can follow, or you can get out of the way. And I'm telling you now to get out of the way. America understands that there's one party in this country that's in favor of health care reform and one party that's against it, and they know why. They understand that if Barack Obama were somehow able to cure hunger in the world, the Republicans would blame him for overpopulation. They understand that if Barack Obama could somehow bring about world peace, they'd blame him for destroying the defense industry. In fact, they understand that if Barack Obama has a BLT sandwich tomorrow for lunch, they will try to ban bacon. But that's not what America wants. America wants solutions to its problems, and that begins with health care. And that's what I'm speaking for tonight. I yield the rest of my time.
The gentleman yields back. Mr. Burton of Indiana.
We Care a Lot from Faith No More. A perfect bumper for that speech by Representative Alan Grayson of Florida that should absolutely... I hope that's on websites all over the liberal blogosphere. And why isn't Alan Grayson being brought on, not to explain why he won't apologize, but to explain exactly what he explained on the floor of the House? Why isn't he all over the for-profit media, I ask you? But David in Tennessee, responsible for that perfect bumper from Faith No More. And, you know, the stuff... I kind of want to wallow in that speech for a few minutes. Because you know what? We've talked about this in the past. I come from a lot of different directions and experiences and so forth. But one of those is language and poetry and creative writing. And I will submit to you that this entire speech is not a speech. It is not oratory. It's freaking poetry. It is poetry. It has the cadences of poetry, and it needs inscribed somewhere. America does not care about procedures, processes, personalities. America doesn't care about that at all. So we have to remember that as Democrats, we have to remember that it's what's at stake is life and death, enormous amounts of money, and people who are counting upon us to move ahead. America understands what's good for America. You know what? That's the grown-up version of that dumbass Calvin Coolidge's, "The business of America is business." America understands what's good for America. And we do. We do. America cares about health care. America cares about jobs. America cares about education, about energy independence. America does not care about process or politicians or personalities or anything like that. And hallelujah to him for calling out the Senate. I guess that's one of those things that one doesn't do in polite political Washington society is call out one's senior house. But good on him for doing it. Because he's right. 6 months wasted. That's 20,000 plus dead Americans. More than 20,000 Americans have died while the leadership in the Senate has walked around fawning after Olympia Snow and licking her shoes. Americans are dying. And it is bedside agony. And it is weeping children and crying wives and grieving husbands. Families that have suddenly been turned on their ears because they were poor to begin with, and now they are facing abject ruin because a bunch of spineless, wimpy-ass Democrats in the United States Senate don't give a rotten rat's rear end about what happens to them and care more about appeasing people who hate them in the first place. Who hate the poor, who hate working America, who despise everything that is good about this country in order to have something that they fallaciously call bipartisanship. You guys get it. Why in God's name don't they? I love the little connections that happen on this program. This is an aside, separate topic. A few years back, little pretty signs were put up at the entrances to some of these country roads here around where I live. We've got one. It's got a lovely painting of a country scene of a road going through up through some hills and knolls and curves. And it's got the name of the road on it.
And that's all was there. But recently, and see, I know that people know what I stand for and what I believe and what we will fight for. Recently, somebody from the religion industry has hung a Bible verse from the book of Ecclesiastes underneath that sign that says, "There is no harm that can come to earth that God will not heal." Think about that for a minute. Well, if you've got that to hang your hat on, then blow up every damn mountain in Appalachia and the devil take the hindmost, right? And I've been, and it's not because it's from the Bible, but because I know what that's pointed at, and I know who that's pointed at, and I know why it's there. It's not even supposed to be there. It is a public road sign and doesn't need some bunch of the religious gibble gabble hung on it. And every day I drive by it, I think, you know, I gotta find a Bible verse to cover that up with. Because I know what it means. And lo and behold, I get an email a few minutes ago on a separate topic from Jude. And she says, when having to hear all the bile coming from the mouths and hearts of these conservative Christian cult members, it reminds me of a line written from their book, Leviticus 18:28. "And if you defile the land, it will vomit you out, as it vomited out the nations that were before you." Jude didn't know that she was solving a problem for me, a problem here right where I live, but she was. She goes on, Jude does, "This is exactly how the ugliness affects me, Bob. It makes me want to vomit out all their doing, thinking, and speaking. So out of the mouth, so speaketh the heart." Just think about it, Bob. Out of their book, it identifies their chosen actions, defiling our land and laws, and spewing out lies. Amen. Absolutely. Hallelujah. Yes. And it also provides me an antidote to a use of the Bible, to justify the rape of creation. I'm going to pass that verse around because it will be put to work inside the attempts to save our region. "And if you defile the land, it will vomit you out, as it vomited out the nations that were before you." That's pretty good. That's billboard stuff. "And if you defile the land, it will vomit you out." That's what's happening around. And I'm going to figure out a way to cover up that Ecclesiastes verse with that Leviticus verse. I'll see your Ecclesiastes and raise you to Leviticus. Because Ecclesiastes isn't part of the Pentateuch. Oh, no, 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 no. That's advisory, Ecclesiastes. Leviticus? That's the law, baby. Aloha. Book 'em, Dano. Yeah. So thank you, Jude. Thank you very much. And a little piece of research. You know, I played that stupid-ass Toby Keith song. The one that made fun of the woman who received third-degree burns from superheated coffee that McDonald's knew was superheated and knew was likely to cause such injury. Sue, who has amazing talents for digging into things, found this. She said, "You pointed out the fact that he slammed the lady that needed reconstructive surgery after being burned by hot coffee. This is from his wiki entry. On March the 24th, 2001, Keith's father was killed in a car accident on Interstate 35. On 25 December 2007, the Covell family was awarded $2.8 million for the wrongful death of H.K. Covell. Elias and Pedro Rodriguez, operators of Rodriguez Transporters of Tulsa, and the Republic Western Insurance Company were found liable as they failed to properly equip the charter bus with properly working air brakes. Pot, meat kettle. Would it have been okay, Oklahoma is okay, would it have been okay for the burned lady's family to have sued if she had died rather than surviving her injuries and the hellish reconstructive surgery? Sue asks. Toby Keith sure talks tough about putting boots up other people's asses, but maybe he should extract his hypocritical head from his own. Hear, hear. All right, let's try to hit some phone fun. Cross our fingers and hope for luck. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, welcome to the program. Yeah, Juanita.
Yeah. Jeb Bush has raised his ugly head again.
Yeah, isn't that just charming?
Of course, I'm sure it's already been raised. I just found out about a new thing about him. He's the chairman of the Foundation for Excellence.
I'm sorry, I lost that last part. He's the chairman of the Foundation for Excellence in what?
Chairman of the Foundation for Excellence in Education. His mother made the first keynote. She was the first keynote speaker, and he recently made a speech. He's coming out in and out for higher education. I guess they got some new tests to sell.
Oh, no. You mean there's a new con out?
There's a what?
There's a new con out. There's a new fraud going around, and the Bushes are promulgating and propagating
it. Man.
Well. How about that?
Yeah. I really like that Bible verse that you talked about.
Yeah, that's a keeper, isn't it?
Yeah. I was part writer of the Left Behind series.
Yeah.
Him and his wife, I've never been able to stand them, you know, but he is, I guess he's a preacher. But, he says, like that other person, you know, I guess, like we can do anything to the animals or anything like that. They were made.
Right, because because the earth.
As we wish.
Yeah, we were given dominion over them. They are yeah. Dominionists.
But. To me, that giving dominion over them is not to lord it over them, you know, and just to use them and abuse them. But anyway, yeah, I really like that verse. That was in Leviticus.
Yes. I'll give you the exact.
But I was surprised, you know, that I've been offended before. You know, I heard so many of them. Of the, you know, when I was listening to a lot of the different evangelists over TV and so forth, how many of them would say something, well, you know, people are so concerned about the whales, or they're concerned about the spotted owl, you know, they need to be concerned about people. And I thought, well, why? Why? What, how do we know that the spotted owl isn't primarily important to our existence, you know? It's,
well, exactly, Juanita, because they do the same sort of thing. One of the studies pointed out the absence of mayflies downstream from mountaintop removal jobs.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the mountaintop removal industry, the destruction industry, the death industry, they just thought that was funny, because, oh, look, they care more about mayflies than they do people.
Yeah.
And they had it explained to them at that hearing that Agnes and the family and I attended in Washington, D.C., When it was explained in the hearing, I can't remember her name, brilliant biologist from, I believe, the University of Maryland, and she said, listen, it's not because we care about mayflies, it's because mayflies are an indicator of whether or not the place is fit to be lived in by humans.
Yeah. Well, you know, look at like the larva of flies, maggots and so forth. I know there was a man that was a prisoner of war of the Japanese, and he was in the Bataan March. And anyway, he had wound his leg. I forgot now what it was exactly, but they had nothing, you know, but they had, like, this doctor was trying to treat him, you know, and he put maggots on that wound, and he kept his leg. He was able to keep his leg because of those maggots. So who knows what, you know, what we're taking away from this earth when we allow different animals to become extinct. We don't know. You know, there's the butterfly theory that the butterfly, it affects the whole world. It's the fluttering of its wings affects the whole world. But I despise some of the teaching that they have, and people fall for it. And another thing too, I think of when they say that whatever we do, the earth. I don't know what they said. You know, on the little sign you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That God would take care of it. Well, I don't think that that means that, well, no matter what you do, you're not going to suffer any consequences. I don't think. Isn't that kind of like when Jesus was tempted and he was supposed to leap? Satan wanted him to leap from the mountain and, you know, God would lift him up. And he said, you don't tempt the Lord your God. But we just do whatever we want to the land and to the people, and not just people, but to the animals. I'm a Christian, you know, God's going to just make it all right. No, I don't believe that. I think we'll pay for the consequences of our actions. And there's so much involved in our country. It's kind of like, you know, like Gary was talking about. Do we really deserve for, you know, to have, is this kind of like Nobel Peace Prize? Is it kind of like countries saying, well, thank you, United States, you finally elected somebody that's got some brains and somebody that's like most of the people in the world, you know, but do we really deserve it as overall, you know, the whole nation as a whole? And we've just got people that just fall for all this, what does he call it, idiocy or whatever?
Idiocracy, sure.
Idiocy,
yeah.
But it's just a complicated situation. But I did hear, I heard some of the comments this morning on the Washington Journal, and I didn't hear it all, but there were people calling in. Well, you know, now this is probably why he hasn't sent any troops over yet to Afghanistan, because he knew he was going to win that, and he didn't want to lose it if he went ahead and sent the troops like he's supposed to.
Oh, for pity's sake.
Yeah. And even a few people called in about, well, what about George Bush? This is an insult to him. We know he didn't do everything right, but he did some wonderful things.
Name one.
Lord of mercy, what wonderful thing.
Yeah, name one.
Yeah, name one. You know, Guy had that on his station for a long time. Name one thing that George Bush had done good. And nobody ever came up with an answer. Nobody.
Yeah, and you know, David in Tennessee points out something with your mention of the spotted owls and so forth. He says, you know, if miners since time immemorial have paid attention to canaries in coal mines, shouldn't we pay attention to mayflies downstream from them?
Yeah.
Hear, hear. God, I love this show. I don't care whether anybody else does or not. I love what I get out of it. See how selfish I am?
Me too.
Hey, Juanita, I got to roll on. We're right up against it, dear. You have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
All right. Bye now. And it is closing time for the weekend for me. Thank you, everyone, for a wonderful week. My apologies for playing hooky last night. My apologies to the five blinking lights on the phone. We'll try again Monday. That's all I can say. Thank you to everyone who stepped up and continues to step up to make sure that the horn remains a going concern, so to speak. We crossed that threshold of the $1,100 we needed to raise, and it was heartening to do so. We still have the regular monthly bills to pay. And so thank you for continuing in your contributions. You know, I had lunch with Dr. Bill O'Brien, our dear friend, today. And, you know, Dr. Bill misses being able to do stuff on the horn, something fierce, but they're working him. Well, they're working him hard over at Concord Beckley. But he said, Bob, I've said it before and I'll say it again. If you guys and the horn can just hang on, you're where broadcasting's going and you're already there. And he's right. And y'all know that. And thank you so very much for all the ways that you make it apparent. Thank you for what you make happen in the PayPal account. Thank you for what you make happen in the mailbox, the snail mailbox in Beckley. Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend. Don't forget Rick's Place with Rick Goodner and the Rick Smith Show coming up this weekend, as well as All Foxed Up Sunday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Radio doesn't stop just because it's the weekend here. Thanks to John Fox, to Ben Birch, to Peter Godbold. Thanks to the hardworking, brave people at Coal River Mountain Watch. You get a pretty good idea why I say that and why I say it every night. CRMW.net and coalriverwind.org. Go to brighterplanet.com, brighterplanet.com. We got into the lead with you guys the night before last, but we have lost the lead. Brighterplanet.com. Click the tab, please. Seriously, this is free. Doesn't cost you anything. Click the tab called Project Fund. You get three votes. Vote for sustainable energy and economic diversification in the Coal River Valley. Projects like this, well, Appalachia's depending on you if you haven't done it already. Put us back in first. Voting continues until October 15th. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors. This is a $5,000 grant to help begin the process of economic diversification. Please. Brighterplanet.com, Project Fund, Sustainable Energy and Economic Diversification in the Coal River Valley. Have a great weekend, everybody. Can't wait to get back Monday. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Welcome to the end of the week. Welcome to Friday on the front porch. It is a beautiful autumn day here in what remains of almost level West Virginia. It is a beautiful day indeed. And a strange day. A strange day indeed. As the saying goes, most peculiar, mama. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Why is it strange? Well, you know, any Friday that you get up and you find out that the President of the United States of America has just been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, well, let's just put it this way. Memo to the Nobel Committee. Thanks for trying to help. Stop helping. Because this has absolutely driven the right wing into paroxysms of absolute insanity. Pure, unmitigated madness. From the local to the national, they are losing their tiny little microscopic minds over this. The racism is boiling out. The bigotry is boiling out. The political hatred is boiling over. And from what I've read, even the White House staff, when they got up this morning and got the news from the committee in Norway, they thought they were being punked. They thought it was a joke. One of them said, is it April 1st already? But yes, the President of the United States, he who our pal Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, refers to as President Not Sure, for reasons having to do with the film Idiocracy, which you will understand should you choose to view that film if you haven't already, has been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Mostly for his efforts to restart peace initiatives among the occupied territories between the Israelis and the Palestinians, also as a direct result of his outreach, what is being termed his outreach to the Muslim world, and his attempt to dial back some of the madness inherent in the mere existence of nuclear arms. But I'm not kidding. It is driving Wingnut World absolutely crazy. And I mean the sheets and the hoods are coming out. By the way, if just throwing this out there, if Rush Limbaugh is allowed to purchase the St. Louis Rams, maybe they can stop being the St. Louis Rams. Maybe they should be renamed the St. Louis Hoods. You know, the right wing really does give that phrase, boys in the hood, an entirely different meaning, doesn't it? No, they might be called the St. Louis Hoods because there's lots of African-American NFL players who are saying, with regard to Limbaugh owning an NFL franchise, oh, hell no! I read a number of comments earlier today with regard to that particular issue. And it is, not going over well, to say the least. New York Jets linebacker Bart Scott says players remember what Limbaugh said about Donovan McNabb. adds that the NFL would not be wise to allow Limbaugh into the league. In particular, he said, it's an oxymoron that he criticized Donovan McNabb. I think Bart Scott's been listening to some liberal talk. I'm wondering if Bart Scott is a Malloy listener, perhaps. Because didn't the word oxymoron originate on the Malloy program with regard to a description for street drug junkie Flush Flembaugh? Scott said a lot of us took it as a more of a racial type thing, talking about the McNabb comment. I can only imagine how his players would feel. I know I wouldn't want to play for him. He's a jerk. And this is one of those for-profit media moments where you can't report a real word because, you know, it's a newspaper. It's a family newspaper. Can't say them words. But apparently, according to the New York Daily News, Bart Scott said he's an hyphen. He's an hyphen. I mean, I know there's that whole linguistic grammatical thing about whether one puts a or an in front of a word beginning with H, as hyphen does. Oh, is it possible that he said he's an...